Hello, everybody. This is April 19th, Monday night, National Liberty Alliance weekly Monday night meeting from 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time till 12 midnight. John is absent today. He's got some technical difficulties. He may come in later. We'll see. I didn't really prepare anything, but there's certainly lots and lots of stuff to talk about. Had some really good articles come in today about the scamdemic. One of the head guys of the laboratories for Pfizer and AstraZeneca and worked for the WHO, and you know, just real establishment kind of resume has blown the whistle on the vaccine, saying that they should stop it immediately, that it's going to cause problems. And I had two or three doctors, and I'll find them. I'll put up the links. You can go see them for yourself. The one guy says that what's happening with this vaccine is that it's a Trojan horse. What happens is it causes a mutated form of the virus, and if you don't die after the first two shots, within the next 3 years it'll kill you. Every time they did animal testing on this type of vaccine, all the cats and ferrets died. They always use cats and ferrets because cats and ferrets are susceptible to the exact same disease. That, can you guys keep it down, please? Just let me hang on a minute. I'm sorry. Guys, hello. I'm on a show. You got to keep it down. They can hear you. So anyway, I'm sorry. I lost my train of thought now. My daughters don't like me telling them to shut up, but that's too bad. It's my house.
Well, you were talking about something that just showed up from a person, and you were talking about viruses. Right.
And I have a few videos. I didn't really prepare for this, but let me see if I can get them. I'm wondering if I share screen, will those videos play? I'd love to. One is only 5 minutes long. It's so good.
You want to try and...
Hang on, let me get my...
And see if it works. I'll let you know.
Hang on a minute. Let me see if I can just bear with me. I mean, this is going to be a very big thing now, because their plan is to, you know, lock us down and basically use this. They use the virus as an excuse to lock us down, as an excuse for the mail-in voting, which we didn't need, which was a scam, because they didn't want Trump to win the election. And they're also using it to take our liberties away. And let's try this one. This one's only 5 minutes, and it talks about the history of pandemics and what they discovered. And let me see. I don't know. I have to share screen here. Okay, I got it up. Let me bring this and see if the share screen is going to work. And just let me know. It looks like it's loading.
All right, whatever.
I gotta tell it what I want.
It's fine.
Let's see here. Oh, I gotta tell it what I want it to show, huh? Can you see that?
Yes, I can. Okay. 5G equals corona?
Yes. Let me play it and make sure you can hear the sound.
Okay. And you could make it full screen. Okay, there you go.
Okay. Can you hear it?
I'm not hearing it yet. Nope, I can't hear it.
What it's all about is that, well,
Well, that might not work because I don't know why you can't hear the sound.
Did you hit your little switch there in Windows that you got to hit to make it, the sound route?
Well, I'm just in my headphones, but how, you know, let's see. I'm on the same as system. It should just go through, right?
Yeah, but there's a little thing that says share video audio, something like that. Share audio.
On the app or on my computer?
On your computer.
I don't know where to find that. I mean, I got my sound system up.
I don't know either. I'm running Linux.
Yeah, no, it doesn't say anything about sharing audio. Let me see here. Recording. I would be loath to play this. Microphone.
Is that okay, a microphone or a speaker down there to the right of the...
No, I got the speaker, and I got the sound thing up where I can switch it from headphones or speakers or whatever. And then I have the recording end, which is the microphone, and it's on my USB microphone. I don't see a headset use. No, that's not right. I don't know how else I could do it. I think John's had trouble sharing stuff with the sound coming in. I don't know what else to do. I mean, I hear it fine on my computer. Actually, I think the app is not picking it up. Let me just go back into the app. Hang on just a second. Bear with me. And see if I can play with these settings. Let's see. We got... Because I got a couple of good videos that really, and I mean, we could put the URLs up there. People, you look at, you have to educate yourself. Don't take my word for it. Go in and do your own research. Let's see. Preferences. We have audio. Same as system. Well, I don't see any way of doing it here. I mean, all right, let me try this. I'll put it on my USB device because it was on same as system. Let's see if this works any better. Am I still sharing or no?
Yes, you are.
Okay, let me run the video and see if it... Did you hear that?
No, I'm not hearing it. Sounds like it's coming through your headphones.
Yep, no sound.
Yeah, how about... Let me try this one more thing before I give up. Let's see. Let me enable... this. Okay, let's try this now. Turn up the sound. I don't know if this will work, but I'll certainly try it. Let's see.
In 1918, after the...
That's working.
Yep. You hear, well, you're getting it through my mic, so I'm going to just, you know, it might not be great quality, but as long as you can hear it. So let's start. This is the beginning of this video. Ready, set. Let's go full screen. It makes it nicer. And go.
In 1918, after the huge, biggest pandemic, the Spanish flu pandemic of 1918, Steiner was asked, what was this all about? And he said, well, viruses are simply excretions of a toxic cell. Viruses are pieces of DNA or RNA with a few other proteins. They bud out from the cell. They happen when the cell is poisoned. They are not the cause of anything. And the cells get poisoned. They try to purify themselves by excreting debris, which we call viruses. If you go to the current theory of viruses called exosomes, and the latest head of the NIH giving a talk on the complexity of viruses, you will see this is perfectly in line with the current thinking on what a virus really is. Every pandemic in the last 150 years, there was a quantum leap in the electrification of the Earth. In 1918, late fall of 1917, there was the introduction of radio waves around the world. Whenever you expose any biological system to a new electromagnetic field, you poison it, you kill some, and the rest go into a kind of suspended animation. So that, interestingly, they live a little bit longer and sicker. And then starts in World War II with the next pandemic, with the introduction of radar equipment all over the Earth, blanketing the entire Earth in radar fields. First time humans have ever been exposed to that. In 1968, there was the Hong Kong flu, and it was the first time the Earth had a protective layer in the Van Allen belts, which essentially integrates the cosmic fields from the Sun and the Earth, from the Moon and Jupiter, et cetera, integrates that and essentially distributes that to the living beings of the Earth. And we put satellites emitting radioactive frequencies in the Van Allen belt. Within 6 months, we had a new viral pandemic. Why viral? Because the people are poisoned, they excrete toxins, they look like viruses. People think it's a flu epidemic. In the 1918 epidemic, the Boston Health Department decided to investigate the contagiousness of this. So they, believe it or not, took hundreds of people with the flu, and they sucked the snot out of their nose and injected it into the healthy people who didn't have the flu, and not one time could they make the next person sick. They did this over and over again, and they were not able to demonstrate contagion. They even did it with horses, who apparently got the Spanish flu, and they put bags over their head, and the horses sneezed in the bag, and they put the bag over the next horse, and not one horse got sick. You can read about this in a book called The Invisible Rainbow by Arthur Furst.
Yeah, I took it off full screen for a minute because people are asking me for the URL, and so I'm going to put it up here. Actually, it's a YouTube right there. If you just go to YouTube and put in 5G electromagnetic equals pandemic diseases, it will come up. So you don't need to copy all this craziness here. So I'll take that down and get rid of that. Okay, let's...
Christenberg, who chronicles all the steps in the electrification of the Earth and how within 6 months there was a new flu pandemic all over the world. And when you invest, when you hear the normal explanations, how did it go from Kansas to South Africa in 2 weeks? So the entire world got symptoms at the same time, in spite of the fact that the mode of transportation was horseback and boats, and there's no explanation for it. They just say, we don't know how that happened. But when you think about it, with these radio waves and other frequencies that some of you have in your pocket and on your wrist, you can send a signal to Japan, and it arrives instantaneously. So any of you who don't believe there's an electromagnetic field that communicates globally within seconds, just is not paying attention to this. And I will only finish by pointing out that there has been a dramatic and quantum leap in the last 6 months with the electrification of the Earth. And I'm sure a lot of you know what that is. It's called 5G, where they now have 20,000 radiation-emitting satellites, just like the radiation-emitting thing in your pocket and on your wrist and that you use all the time. That is not compatible with health. I'm sorry to say it. It's not compatible with health. That is a water destructuring device. And for any of you who say, yeah, well, we're not electrical beings, we're just physical matter, then don't bother doing an EKG or an EEG or a nerve conduction test, because we are electrical beings and the chemicals are only the byproduct of those electrical impulses. And I'll finish with, anybody want to make one guess as to where the first completely blanketed 5G city in the world was? Exactly. But this is something that is unprecedented.
That was Wuhan.
The putting of 100,000 satellites in the very blanket of the Earth. And by the way, as I was going to say earlier, this actually has something to do with the vaccine question. And this got brought home to me because about a year ago or so, I had a patient who came in who was totally fine, a surfer and all, and then he broke his. He works as an electrician putting in Wi-Fi systems for very wealthy people. Electricians have a very high mortality rate. But he was fine. And then he breaks his arm and gets a metal plate put in his arm. 3 months later, he couldn't get out of bed and his total, you know, heart irregularities, just total collapse. The susceptibility has to do with how much metal you have in your body, as well as the quality of the water in your cells. So if you start injecting aluminum in people, they become receptors for absorbing increased electromagnetic fields. And that is a perfect storm for the kind of deterioration of the species, which is what we're now experiencing. And I'm just going to finish with one more thing, which I like to, is a quote from Rudolf Steiner. And by the way, this was around 1917. In times when there were no electrical currents, when the air was not swarming with electrical influences, we're talking 1917, it was easier to be human. For this reason, in order to be human at all today, it is necessary to expend much...
Hi, I'm Mike with RF.
Well, I guess that's the end of that. You get the idea. There's a whole bunch of these. And if you go to that, URL...
So any of you who don't believe there's
anybody,
electromagnetic.
So the heading on this in YouTube is 5G, electromagnetic and an equal sign, pandemic diseases, question mark. That's the subject. And if you put that up in the YouTube search, you should come to this page. Because otherwise, I'm going to have to sit here with all this N-U-G-N list and equals and greater or less than. So, anyway. Weirdopedia is the channel. Weirdopedia? Okay. Let me just stop my screen share for now. Okay, well, that's the first one, and I've heard that before. I've heard that claim that is due to electromagnet. They foo-foo it. And guess what? You're getting a lot more metal in your bodies from their geoengineering. We can't say chemtrails because they claim you have two heads. But if you go in and you say geoengineering and you look up, all the documents are right there on the government websites, and they absolutely are seeding the clouds. Even they do tests on the snow at the tops of mountains, like Mount Shasta has something like 60,000 times more than what the EPA considers safe of aluminum and barium heavy metals. So how did it get up there? It's because they're raining it down on our head. And what's happening is it's going into our bodies. We're drinking it in the water. It's absorbing in our skin. And it's all part of the plan. It's all part of the plan for them to track us and trace us and turn us into transhumans and be able to control us using the 5G. It's a scary, scary world out there right now. It really is. There's so much stuff going on, and I don't know how you keep up with it all, but what's his name? Lindell lost his sight, so that's a good thing, because we'll have a place where we can put up videos. That was Frank Sign Up. This is it. It's live right now. It's running. They're running a live test of it. FrankSpeech.com. You should go in and sign up. You can. When it's completely released, you'll be able to go up there and put videos, and they won't get taken down. Let's see. I have another good one here. Wait a minute. Just bear with me. There's so much stuff going on today, you can't even keep track of it, you know. I couldn't get a good video with this. This Dr. Roger Hoskin, he has quite a credential. I don't know if I can, let me see if I can get his original video, and I'll play that too. Let me see.
To S. Peterson. S. Peterson. We would love to hear from you. The floor is yours.
Hang on.
Oh, okay. Well, we would love to hear from you. The floor is yours.
Thank you very much. I do appreciate the opportunity to address you on this very important matter. What I'm going to say is lay language and blunt. It's counter-narrative, and so you don't immediately think I'm a quack. I'm going to briefly outline my credentials so that you can understand where I'm coming from in terms of knowledge base in all of this. I'm a medical specialist in pathology, which includes virology. I trained at Cambridge University in the UK. I'm the ex-president of the pathology section of the Medical Association. I was previously an assistant professor in the Faculty of Medicine doing a lot of teaching. I was the chairman of the Royal College of Physicians of Canada Examination Committee in Pathology in Ottawa. But more to the point, I'm currently the chairman of a biotechnology company in North Carolina selling a COVID-19 test. And you might say I know a little bit about all of this. The bottom line is simply this. There is utterly unfounded public hysteria driven by the media and politicians. It's outrageous. This is the greatest hoax ever perpetrated on an unsuspecting public. There is absolutely nothing that can be done to contain this virus, other than protecting older, more vulnerable people. It should be thought of nothing more than a bad flu season. This is not Ebola. It's not SARS. It's politics playing medicine, and that's a very dangerous game. There is no action of any kind needed other than what happened last year when we felt unwell. We stayed home, we took chicken noodle soup, we didn't visit Granny, and we decided when we would return to work. We didn't have anyone to tell us. Masks are utterly useless. There is no evidence base for their effectiveness whatsoever. Paper masks and fabric masks are simply virtue signaling. They're not even worn effectively most of the time. It's utterly ridiculous seeing these unfortunate, uneducated people, I'm not saying that in a pejorative sense, seeing these people walking around like lemmings, obeying without any knowledge base to put the mask on their face. Social distancing is also useless because COVID is spread by aerosols, which travel 30 meters or so before landing. Enclosures have had such terrible unintended consequences. Everywhere should be open tomorrow, as was stated in the Great Barrington Declaration that I circulated prior to this meeting. And a word on testing. I do want to emphasize that I'm in the business of testing for COVID. I do want to emphasize that positive test results do not, underlined in neon, mean a clinical infection. It's simply driving public hysteria, and all testing should stop unless you're presenting to hospital with some respiratory problem. All that should be done is to protect the vulnerable and to give them all in the nursing homes that are under your control. Give them all 3,000 to 5,000 international units of vitamin D every day, which has been shown to radically reduce the likelihood of infection. And I would remind you all that using the province's own statistics, the risk of death under 65 in this province is 1 in 300,000. 1 in 300,000. You've got to get a grip on this. The scale of the response that you're undertaking with no evidence for it is utterly ridiculous given the consequences of acting in a way that you're proposing. All kinds of suicides, business closures, funerals, weddings, etc., etc. It's simply outrageous. It's just another bad flu. And you've got to get your minds around that. Let people make their own decisions. You should be totally out of the business of medicine. You're being led down the garden path by the chief medical officer of health of this province. I'm absolutely outraged that this has reached this level. It should all stop tomorrow. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for that. Again, hopefully all layers of government are listening. We have the least amount of influence, but we definitely appreciate everything that you just had to say. Okay.
Okay. That's that. And there's more. There's lots of credentialed people, you know, that are saying this. And these guys are putting their reputation and their lives on the line because they kill people for this, because they're making lots of money on this testing and on the virus itself and the vaccines. And it's really disgusting. And we need to do something about it. You know, it's getting to the point that it's ridiculous. In the Philippines, if you don't have your mask on properly, they shoot you in the head. They've shot a couple people in the head for disobeying because they have no rights over there at all. So I don't know if Brent wants to comment on any of this, but feel free to, if you have anything else. I got lots and lots. I don't want to make the whole thing on the virus, although the virus is the thing that's going to take our rights away first and foremost. This video here,
you mentioned the Philippines, and I was in the Philippines when they were under martial law during the days of Marcos, And I haven't read what you said, but I certainly do believe it, because that's the way it was there. They didn't seem to bat an eye over things like that. Everybody had to go off the street at midnight curfew, or they took a chance of getting shot. So I've heard that is true over there also, and I'm anxious to find out what else you got here with this next video.
I got lots of stuff. I got to hold myself back because we can go on all night with this, you know. It's just, it's ridiculous. This one here, actually, this is an hour and 4 minutes, and every last bit of it is very, very compelling. And he has a lot of good information here. And I want you to hear who he says is making this claim here. Dr. Gert van Boschik, a German scientist, world expert in infectious and immune-related diseases, including their immune pathogen, pathosis. But anyway, I'm going to let him say it. I'm going to go ahead. I'll try to screen share this one also. I don't know. You know, I just hit the sound thing. Let me know when I play this, either Terry or Brent, if the sound's coming through now. Let's see. Oh, wait a minute. I have to turn the screen share on. I'm sorry.
We can see it, Gerard, but we can't.
Oh, you can see it? You can see a coming COVID catastrophe?
Yeah, it looks like it's buffing up, and it's, but it's not.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let me let it get to the point where it's actually going to play, and let me know if the sound's going to come through without me putting it through the speakers. I don't know why it's not. It's buffering. It was playing fine earlier today. I don't know. Maybe I need to refresh it. This is probably one of the best videos I've seen on the subject. Are you hearing that?
No, not.
Not yet.
Try it again. Try it again, George. Very vaguely. Very quiet.
Yeah, I don't know what to do about that. I guess I'm going to just have to do it the other way. Because, let's see. Let me just go back here. Select items to share. I clicked sound. I don't know what else to click. Hardware and sound? Oh, wait a minute. Share computer sound. I didn't click this one. How about this one? Apply changes. Let's try that. I guess next time I do this, I'll be an expert. Hang on.
A letter to every single professor.
There it is.
He's coming through.
Okay. All right. So let's go back. Pay attention. This is really, really compelling.
Something gigantic has happened this week. At least I think it is, and you can decide for yourself as we weigh into this. To begin with, there is a world-renowned vaccine creator that went on his LinkedIn and put out a letter to every single professional in the world, essentially telling them we must stop the vaccination program immediately. Here's just a couple of excerpts from his letter. Let's take a look at this. As a dedicated virologist and vaccine expert, I only make an exception when health authorities allow vaccines to be administered in ways that threaten public health, most certainly when scientific evidence is being ignored. The present extremely critical situation forces me to spread this emergency call. As the unprecedented extent of human intervention in the COVID-19 pandemic is now at risk of resulting in a global catastrophe without equal, this call cannot sound loudly enough. He goes on, sufficient scientific evidence has been brought to the table. Unfortunately, it remains untouched by those who have the power to act. How long can one ignore the problem when there is at present massive evidence that viral immune escape is now threatening humanity? We can hardly say we didn't know or were not warned. In this agonizing letter, I put all of my reputation and credibility at stake. I expect from you, guardians of mankind, at least the same. It is of utmost urgency. Do open the debate. By all means, turn the tide. I think he goes on and has this statement to make, a form of a disclaimer, I suppose. For those who may have some difficulty in understanding how mass vaccination drives viral immune escape, it will suffice to watch infectivity and morbidity rates in those countries who have now succeeded in vaccinating millions of people in just a few weeks, e.g. UK, Israel, USA. Whereas these countries are now enjoying declining infectivity rates, they will undoubtedly start to suffer from a steep incline in COVID-19 cases in the weeks to come. The steep decline we're seeing right now may be followed by a short-lived plateau, but a subsequent steep incline of severe disease cases is inevitable. These are shocking statements. And to be clear, just so you recognize, this man could not be more pro-vaccine. In fact, he may be one of the most highly ranked and talented vaccine creators in the world. Let's take a look at the resume of the man that is screaming at the top of the mountain right now. This is Geert Vandenbosch, PhD. He was at GSK Biologicals. He was a senior project leader of Adolescent Vaccine Projects, new biotech vaccine development and QC/QA manager, head of adjuvant technologies and alternative deliveries and R&D. At Novartis Vaccines and Diagnostics, he was the director, research program leader, and head of adjuvants. At Solvay Biologicals, global project director of the influenza vaccines. For the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, he was the senior program officer, global health vaccine discovery. For Global Alliance for Vaccine and Immunization, which we refer to as Gavi, he was the program manager. And at UNIVAC, he was the chief innovation and scientific officer. He's also at the German Center for Infectious Research, head of the Vaccine Development Office. And at Verico, he is was the managing director. Okay, this guy is anything but an anti-vaxxer. He is as pro-vaccine as you can get, yet there is something that has got him terrified. Now, that letter really only speaks to the professionals in his field. But luckily for us, he did an interview, I believe it was last week. And normally, you know, we would love to bring Geert on, but I think this interview is so perfect that I'm going to do something we rarely do here on the High Wire. We're going to go through the interview as it appeared. So I want to make sure that you recognize that all the credit needs to go to the doctor that created this YouTube video and does this interview, but let us walk through what I believe.
I'm going to pause for a minute because I can and because I have more information that I did a lot of research. I'm always researching. And way back when we were in the Gulf War, the soldiers were coming back with Gulf War syndrome, and they said, oh, it's from the depleted uranium and all this other stuff. Well, come to find out, every time they come up with new vaccines, who do they give it to first? They always experiment on the military. And they made them get these shots to go over there into the Middle East. And then guys were coming back with Gulf War syndrome. He talks about adjuvants. And I don't know if you know what an adjuvant is. You know, when they make a vaccine, they have to put in a disabled or dead form of the virus. And they hope that when that goes in there, your immune system will see it and make antibodies against that particular protein. However, in order to make sure that that really happens and it happens well, they'll mix an adjuvant with it. And an adjuvant is anything that's going to make the body make an immune system response. So, I mean, you know, I went through the trouble of getting my children the dead polio vaccine when I only did my oldest son, and I didn't vaccine any of them because I did research on it. I didn't want any of their thermosol mercury. That's what caused the autism that they deny to this day, but I know for a fact that it causes autism. And so I went and got the dead form of the vaccine, which is the original one I think it's Salk that made the polio vaccine. And he never intended for them to give us a vaccine with the live form. The sugar cube has the live virus. And what happens with the live virus is children will shed it and they will give polio to other children. And that when they started giving those sugar cube vaccines, that's when the polio shot up in this country. But I'm getting off base. So the adjuvant problem is that they give a weakened or dead form of the pathogen, the virus, so to speak, like polio, it was disabled, and they add something that the body doesn't particularly like. And the body makes an immune system response, and because of that response, it also picks up the weakened form of the thing that they want your body to make antibodies for, whether it's mumps or measles or anything else like that. And it will also make you immune, the theory is, to that thing that they put in the vaccine to begin with that they're trying to stop. Well, in the vaccines that they gave our troops, they use squalene as an adjuvant. Now, squalene is a natural substance. It's your nerve linings, your sheaths are made out of it. Like when you get carpal tunnels, those sheaths that the nerves run through, they are coated with squalene. The body actually makes squalene for your nerve sheaths. Now, what happened is, when they use squalene as an adjuvant, and I was talking to a doctor that said, "Oh, what are you worried about? It's a natural substance found. You know, it's nothing unnatural. It's not like mercury and all this stuff." And I said, "That's nice, doctor." I won't give his name. He was a doctor that went to our church, and we had some of our religious people getting all these vaccines because they always, you know, I don't know what it is about churches, but, you know, maybe it's their 501(c). They want to do everything the government tells them to do. And I got my thoughts on that, too, that I'll give you in a minute. But he says it's a natural substance. And I said, "Well, doctor, you know, steak is a natural substance, too. But I don't grind it up and put it in a needle and shoot it into my veins, because my body wouldn't like it very much like that. It has to go through my digestive system, don't you think?" Well, what happened with the squalene, and squalene, yes, you can eat it. It's in different things, and your body makes it. Well, when the body saw this natural squalene coming into the bloodstream unnaturally, undigested, it had to make antibodies against it. So what happened is, anytime the body has to make an antibody against something that your body produces, there's a name for that. It's called autoimmune disease. And that's exactly what happened with this Gulf War syndrome. The vaccine they gave the guys, their body started making antibodies against their own squalene, and so they had all kinds of nerve problems, things that look like MS and Parkinson's and all this stuff. And it was all due to the adjuvant that they put in there. And, of course, they're all in denial. So that's what an adjuvant is, and that's why they use them. So let's move on. I'll let him go. I don't want to get too long on it. But
Steve may prove to be the most important interview in the history of mankind. Let's get started. Here's how the video starts out.
I have the pleasure of having with me Gert van den Bosch from Belgium. The difference is that Gert is truly an international vaccine developer, and he's here to share some very important and unique perspectives on where we are now in terms of the COVID pandemic. So, pleasure to have you here with me, Gert. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks for having me, Philip.
Wonderful, wonderful. Listen, I mean, I think the first thing that we have to clarify is that we have to explain you are someone who is in the vaccine development business, so to speak. What has that background been like?
Well, I have a background essentially in, as far as vaccines are concerned, in industry as well as in the non-for-profit sector. So I have been working with Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Gavi, especially concentrating on vaccines for global health. Mm-hmm. And I've also been working with several different companies, vaccine companies, developing, of course, essentially prophylactic vaccines. And my main focus of interest has always been, in fact, the design of vaccines. So the concept, how can we educate the immune system in ways that are to some extent more efficient than we do right now with our conventional vaccines.
Right. And so in effect, this is the area of work you've been in. You develop vaccines. You are as well working with the Ebola vaccine as well, one of the really, really dangerous viruses we have out there in the world. How does that work? Is that easy to do?
Well, I was not, let me be very clear, I was a coordinator of the Ebola program at Gavi. So we were interacting with several different vaccine companies that were developing Ebola vaccines, because it was important for Gavi to make the right choice, the right vaccine, in order for this vaccine to be rolled out in the Western African
established that if some guy... All right, so obviously he starts out by, you know, getting into the credentials of Geert Van den Bosch here, and I think there's a couple of things that I found striking right away. What he says is really his specialty is on the design of vaccines. He understands the design of all the vaccines being made in the world. He's worked for Gavi, and in that case, he oversaw the Ebola vaccine program, and his area of specialty is understanding the effect of using vaccines and choosing the specific vaccines and its impact in mass vaccination programs, okay? Have we established that if some guy is going to have an issue with a mass vaccination campaign, this is the guy we all thought was supposed to be in charge, right? But for some reason, he's not. Let's hear what he goes on to say.
If we have 2020 vision at the moment when we look back at the pandemic, and where we started from. And I've always said that at the time when the pandemic started, when it got from China into Italy, into Europe, into the UK, I thought that the only way that we could manage this is to lock down and to prevent the spread of this very dangerous virus. We do have to stand back and see whether or not those decisions were correct. But as we said, hindsight is 2020. What would you say now, as we look back at the decisions we made then? Were we about on the right track? Did we make any mistakes?
Well, frankly speaking, from the very beginning, and I mean, there is many people who can witness this or testify this, I always said that it was a bad idea to do lockdowns that would also affect the younger people, that we would prevent younger people from having contact, from being exposed. Because remember, the big difference back then was, of course, that we had a viral strain, COVID strain, that was circulating, dominant strain, and that was not highly infectious as those that we are seeing right now. Of course, when a new virus gets into a population, it immediately gets to the folks that have, you know, weak immunity. And we know these people. This is to a large majority, of course, elderly people, people that have underlying diseases or are otherwise immune suppressed, etc. And, of course, I mean, it was certainly the right thing to do to protect these people and for them also to isolate. But we have to distinguish, frankly speaking, and that is what we have not been doing, between those people that have strong innate immunity. I mean, it's not...
I'm going to push this ahead a little bit more. The average person that died with this virus was 80 or over. There was all kinds of things they did to push the death toll up, like taking infected people and pushing them into nursing home. Our great Governor Cuomo was part of that murder. And they also decided that if they tested you and you came up with any COVID at all, and they had these PCR tests turned up above 35 cycles, which is ridiculous, because any little tiny piece of protein you have in your body is going to identify it. And if it happens to be one of the coronaviruses, it's going to call it COVID. And I remember the health nurse saying, if you die with COVID, we're going to put down that you die of COVID. So they had people that died in car accidents and gunshot wounds and all this stuff as COVID patients. They've been quickly redoing the numbers. There's actually, if you look at the total deaths worldwide, there's no more total deaths over the past 2 years than there was in any other year. That's the telling thing. There is no pandemic. There is no people dying in the streets. It's all a lie. They put this pantomime on because they're using this as a weapon against us. There's even more to it than that. But let's go on. I want you to see what's so terrible about this vaccine that they came out with that he's screaming about. So I'll try to move it up quicker. Let's see here.
And that has also led to, bad control right from the beginning.
College students and healthy people, their immune system. There's the actual bumper sticker.
And that has also led to, bad control right from the beginning, I would say.
All right, so I think there's some important points to be made here. And by the way, if you're watching The High Wire for the first time, as it turns out, we actually geek out on the science. If you're a person that say, I wonder what's going on here, but what you want is a bumper sticker slogan to make you feel better, then go watch some other network. What we're going to get into and where he's about to go is so deep and profound and powerful that you're going to have to actually care about science. What we're going to get into is the science here with Geert. But let's be specific at what he's pointing out. When there is any time there's a pandemic, when there's a virus that starts spreading, the first people that really we see it affect are those that don't have waning immune systems, the elderly, those that are sick. It's exactly what we saw over the age of 65 with other comorbidities. And we talked about the Great Barrington Declaration. There's now over 50,000 scientists and experts and doctors that have all said exactly what Geert is saying here. He is saying that those are the new numbers. There we go. So we're over 50,000, over 750,000 concerned citizens. If you haven't signed the Great Barrington Declaration, you better check it out online and get your signature in there because these things matter. But what he's telling us is that we should have protected that, extremely vulnerable population, something the High Wire has supported from day one. It's what we've been saying. But what also the High Wire has been saying is those that are young, that are healthy, they need to get out and they need to go catch this illness. And as he pointed out, they're only going to just enhance their immune system. It's going to be made even stronger. He gets into a detail I hadn't really thought about and didn't really fully understand, that once you get older, once you become, when you're in the later years of your life, you no longer have humoral immunity, or otherwise known as your innate immune system, which is sort of this initial sort of general immune system that just attacks and kicks butt. You're stuck with antigen immunity, meaning the things that you've caught through your life, the memory is going to be looking for those things, but it doesn't have the ability to take on a brand new virus or some variant we haven't seen. But our children, they've got that in spades, and college students and healthy people, it's just rocking. We've just got, Mike Tyson's in there ready to go and take out any brand new virus. So we should have been out in the population dealing with it, while the elderly that don't have that innate immune system that we do, they should have been secured.
So they locked us down, made us wear masks, social distance us, closed our businesses. And besides all the other bad thing that implies, it lowered our immune system. Wearing masks lowers your immune system. It lowers the herd immunity. That's how Fauci knew that when the mask came off, there would be a surge in cases, because he's lowered everybody's system. He's had them hiding in the basement, nobody meeting anybody. So now all of a sudden you don't come into contact with these viruses on a daily basis like you used to. So then when you come in contact with them, everybody gets sick. So yeah, he knew there was going to be a resurgence. He created it. And the reason I'm spending so much time on this is because what I've discovered, and you'll see, I got another little article I'll throw up here before we get off of this, is we've had more than a third of this country, and actually a third of the world, that's taken this PCR vaccination, which is a Frankenstein vaccination. And what they know now, because what they know from the animal testing, when they did do animal testing on these type of vaccines, that they all died, almost 100%. So what, and if you don't die within the first, you know, few hours or weeks of taking the vaccine, then you'll move on into another stage. But everybody that took that vaccine, and I'm sorry if you took the vaccine to upset you, but they will all be dead within 3 years. It's a death sentence. And you can't reverse it, because it changes your DNA, and it has your body making this protein, this corona protein. And he's going to explain why that's so bad. Now, the only thing that people who took the vaccine can do is keep their immune systems up with stuff like ivermectin and D3, and hope that they can fend this off before it catches them. But it's a very horrible thing, and I don't know what this country, what the world's going to come to. This is Bill Gates's dream, his eugenics dream, Fauci and Gates. All those people that are going to be dead here in 3 years, if they got 2 years left, I think that they should at least have the consolation of seeing Bill Gates and Anthony Fauci and some other ones, tetrahedros there, he's a devil. They should be hanging from ropes before these people die. That should be our goal. There's going to be lawsuits. It's going to be disgusting. But it's also going to affect our economy, and it's going to affect our military. And it could kill us as a nation. It could kill the free world. But anyway, let's go on. And it's very important that we understand what's going on here, because it's the biggest war pushed on the people, covert war, silent weapons for quiet wars. That's what it was all about, and that's what China put on us. This is all run through China. Anyway, here we go.
Exactly what the Great Barrington Declaration has been discussing, and obviously scientists and virologists agree around the world. All right, now let's start getting into more details. Here we go.
There's still a rise in cases. Countries had to try and lock down, mask mandates, and so on. But we all had the hope that vaccines would come and break the cycle. This is where clearly now, from your expertise, you seem to have a different thought about how we should have been thinking about vaccines then and even now. What is your perspective?
Well, my perspective was and still is that if you go to war, you better make sure that you have the right weapon. And the weapon in itself can be an excellent weapon, and that is what I'm saying really about the current vaccines. I mean, it's just brilliant people who have been making these vaccines in no time and with regulatory approval and everything. So the weapon in itself is excellent. Question is this the right weapon for the kind of war that is going on right now? And there my answer is definitely no. Because these are prophylactic vaccines, and prophylactic vaccines should typically not be administered to people who are exposed to high infectious pressure. So don't forget, we are administering these vaccines in the heat of a pandemic. So in other words, while we are preparing our weapon, we are fully attacked by the virus. The virus is everywhere. So that is a very different scenario from using such vaccines in a setting where the vaccinee is barely or not exposed to the virus. And I'm saying this because if you have a high infectious pressure, it's so easy for the virus to jump from one person to the other. So if your immune response, however, is just mounting, as we see right now with a number of people who get their first dose. They get their first dose, the antibodies are not fully mature, or titers are maybe not very high, so their immune response is suboptimal. But they are in the midst of this war. While they are mounting an immune response, they are fully attacked by the virus. And every single time, I mean, this is textbook knowledge, every single time you have an immune response that is suboptimal, in the presence of an infection, in the presence of a virus that infects that person, you are at risk for immune escape. So that means that the virus can escape to the immune response. And that is why I'm saying that these vaccines, I mean, in their own right, are of course excellent. But to you.
Now, he's saying this vaccine is excellent in its own little niche of prophylactically stopping the coronavirus. But because we're in the midst of a pandemic of this virus, that it's going to overwhelm the immune system because the first people that took it had a low response. And so that's going to facilitate the vaccine mutating and jumping out. And you're going to get this new virus that's going to affect people worse. It's going to be harder to come out of. But, you know, he has to be careful the way he couches this because he's the scientist that was making this. He works for all these big companies. You know, they probably want to kill him just with this report. There is no time that they should ever use a PCR vaccine in a human being ever because it changes your DNA. It transhumanizes you. It's irreversible. There's no excuse. It should, you know, this gain of function testing they were doing to come up with this, to bring this virus to fruition, was illegal, and they weren't even supposed to be doing it, but they did it anyway, thanks to Fauci giving China $3.5 million after they kicked them out of this country, and he sent the Chinese scientist, who also was some kind of a lieutenant in the Chinese Communist Party. They're in all our research schools and laboratories, so they kicked them out and went back to China. And they built that lab with American dollars. So we're our own worst enemy. Fauci and Gates need to hang for this. But anyway, I don't want to keep going on the politics of it. That's going to come later. But there's no way that they should be using this PC, this vaccine with the DNA modification. But I'm going to push it ahead so that you can kind of understand why and what it is.
Use them in the midst of in the 10 hours.
I think the discussion may be over there. So when Fauci says we're waiting for data to come in, I've been thinking, you know, I think the data would have been here by now. This guy is telling you, Geert says, I know for a fact, I've been in all these laboratories. He knows what this is. He's been around over the last 20 years of studying mRNA vaccines and viral vector vaccines. This guy has been in all those laboratories, in fact, running most of them. So when he tells you this vaccine is not designed to stop the infection and therefore transmission, I would take him for his word. And so what he's saying, and look, he's doing his job. He believes in vaccines. He's telling you, this is an excellent product. I would challenge him on that, but it doesn't matter. He's saying this is an excellent product, but it's the wrong weapon. It's the wrong weapon for the war we're in. A prophylactic vaccine cannot be used once the war is upon you, once you're already under assault. He talks about something we have already talked with you a lot about. We are very concerned about people that get that first shot, and then we see the news reports that after their first shot, they got the natural infection. That is the worst case scenario for some reasons we haven't even talked about. We brought up antibody-dependent enhancement, that somehow that could backfire on you and make the virus more deadly. But what he's saying is you're creating a worst case scenario where you are mounting what he calls a suboptimal response. It's not the optimal response by the vaccine. Your body's trying to create the antibodies and it's only gotten started after the first shot or right when you get the second shot and already you're under attack. And so the virus is going to win. And when I was thinking about him describing it, it reminded me of a self-defense class that I was in at one point where the teacher was talking about, you know, look, if you have a safe under your bed that has a handgun, you probably shouldn't have, you know, the I guess, in case your kids get in there or whatever. He said, so you're going to have a handgun and, you know, a safe. You want to open it. Then you put the magazine in your gun, and then you're ready to handle it. So let's be clear. This is a perfect weapon and a perfect scenario. Should your dog start barking and you hear that someone's outside your house and you're worried that somebody might be casing your house, you open up your safe, you grab your gun, you pop in your magazine, you're ready to go to defend your house. But let's be clear. If you wake up in your bedroom and you see across the room there's an assailant standing there, by the time you reach over and try and get into your safe, get your magazine, the gun, that assailant is on you, and now you are in trouble. You will not, that gun will be useless to you. And I think about what Geert's saying, that's what he's telling you. This would have been great if the virus was coming sometime and you had time to prepare for it and they still got to get through your front door. It's already attacking you. At that point, the gun is no longer the appropriate weapon. In this case, natural immunity would be. In this case, hand-to-hand combat. They're charging at your bed. You're just sat up in bed. You got to jump up and handle that person with your hands as best you can. That's your best case scenario. Doesn't matter that you have a perfectly designed weapon that could do something. It can't do it under this scenario. It will be just developing. You'll just be loading this gun. You'll just be developing antibodies, and you will be caught by surprise. And that is the worst case scenario. And now we're teaching the virus how to get around this vaccine. It's now learning because it's not a full mounted defense. And now it's understanding how the vaccine is working, and it's going to start creating other problems, which he's going to get deeper into. And then when we think about those people like, well, I mean, you know, it stops the variants or the whole discussion. He says something that I found so shocking. He says, you must understand, this virus mutates within 10 hours. So if somebody's having a suboptimal response, it is going to mutate around that suboptimal response and become stronger and more powerful within 10 hours. And so he's saying, we're trying to catch up with that. We're getting in this race. What are we going to keep making vaccines for all the variants as they appear? Or as Eugenio very well put out, if you're making a third shot, doesn't that mean you're not trusting the two shots is going to work? You're darn right. This guy's telling you they're not going to work. But it's not going to be a third shot or a fourth shot. This tweet came to mind. Look at this tweet. This is this guy. Figure below shows thousands of COVID mutations so far. Each point denotes a mutation. Now stop panicking every time you hear of a new mutation with a country or city brand name. Look at all of those dots, folks. This is the reality. Thousands. This thing mutates like crazy. We have thousands. Are we going to take that many vaccines to handle all the variants? This is the wrong weapon for the wrong war. It couldn't be better said, but he's going to get into some really, really stark details. Take a look at this.
You mentioned this in your paper. It's as equivalent to using either a partial dose of antibiotics in an antimicrobial or in a bacterial infection, where you then produce superbugs. Is this the kind of example that you're alluding to?
Well, that is a very good parallel. It's also the parallel I'm using, actually, in the paper we just posted on LinkedIn, which, you know, same here. And I give just one example. If you now give people just like one dose, I mean, they are in the process of mounting their antibodies. The antibodies still need to fully mature, etc.
Invention of the 20th century.
Of a war, there is a high infectious pressure. So the likelihood that an immune escape immediately finds another living cell, that means another host, is very, very high. It's per definition. It's the definition almost of a pandemic.
I mean, he says what I've been saying. You know, we may look back and say Louis Pasteur and antibiotics. I used to say, you know, vaccines aren't the greatest invention of the 20th century. Antibiotics are. But now we're looking at the end of the antibiotic age. And if it turns out we only made it like 100 years, we're able to stop infection. But by giving antibiotics, we were teaching bacteria how to get smarter and more powerful. And now they're getting around the antibiotics. We've all seen this, right? The overuse of it in cattle, the overprescription in people. So many scientists and doctors are panicked about it. And most pharmaceutical companies have stopped making all antibiotics because they're saying that the bacteria are mutating so fast now that any product they go into development on, by the time they get it out in the market, the bacteria is already figuring its way around it. Well, how do you avoid that? You got to kill it dead. You got to win the battle. If you got the right weapon, it's got to kill it dead immediately. But what he's saying, just like not taking all of your prescription, all of that antibiotics, which I never really understood that. Why do I got to keep taking it? I'm feeling better. Now I recognize because you don't want your body to turn into a mutation factory that is going to turn this, what was just a, you know, benign bacteria or just mildly infectious, into a deadly killer. Like we now see SARS, MRSA, and CRS, and these different things that are...
I mean, into these epithelial cells.
Into an antibody production space to just finally clean up the last little bit. But science thinks antibodies were the greatest part of this. They're dead wrong. That is the weakest part of the immune response, especially to this coronavirus. They are not inspiring your NK cells. They're coming in for the after effect saying, see, we got more of the cleanup crew than you did. I don't want a bunch of maids and plumbers. I want the warriors fighting for me. But this vaccine doesn't do that. And now it starts getting really, really scary. Get ready. I hope you're ready for this. But if you're like me, you must be sitting there right now and saying, oh my God, it's now all starting to make some sense. By the end of the show, I am telling you, you are going to be ready to have a conversation you've never been able to have. You are going to be able to say, I now know what happened in this pandemic, and I know what we're going to do if we keep vaccinating. Get ready. Strap yourself in. This ride is about to get really rough. Here we go.
It raises the point that I've always been saying, is that we haven't spent enough time understanding how the virus impacts the body and understanding how the pandemic then will impact the world. We've spent all of our time just going for solutions. Has that been a mistake?
Of course, this has been the most important mistake, I think. I'm not sure many people, and I was part of them. I was just explaining, we don't understand our weapon because we don't understand that prophylactic vaccines should not be used in the midst of an epidemic, and we don't understand exactly what the virus is doing. So we go to a war, and we don't know our enemy.
This is very important, this part. This is what I want you to see. Pay attention, and it'll become clear.
2 minutes ago, these natural antibodies, they provide you with broad protection. This protection is, yes, it is variant non-specific. It doesn't matter what variant you get. It is the
long-lived antibodies. I'm going to use sort of a football way to describe. Now, I think this video is pretty clear, but I really want to make sure that we all get this, because I actually learned something this week that I wasn't fully aware of, and now it is crystal clear. But let me see if I can help make it clear, crystal clear, for anybody that's sort of thinking about what he said. Now, here's what he is describing, and this is sort of, if you ever, you know, played any sport, soccer, football, hopefully this makes some sense to you. But on our team, in our immune system, we have what are called non-specific antibodies. They have, he called it broad spectrum. It's a broad spectrum. Low affinity. They don't care who is coming across. In this case, let's look at the other team. Let's say these are all variants of coronavirus. We got the A variant, F, T, R, L, Y, X. Okay? Now, it doesn't matter who gets the ball in this case. When we have non-specific, anyone that comes across. So, let's say X gets the ball, running back gets the ball, comes running over here, boom, right here, non-specific antibodies. Boom, tackled, dead, not going anywhere. But let's say it's a different play. Let's say they decide they, you know, we're going to run Y. So they run Y with a roundabout coming through here. Boom, it doesn't matter. Non-specific, we see the Y too. It doesn't matter. We're going to go after anything because it's non-specific. It's brilliant. These are brilliant antibodies you have as your natural immune system. What if it's a trick play? What if they toss it to A and over here tries to get through? Doesn't matter. Bam! Non-specific is going to go after the A variant too. This is how your immune system works, and it's fantastic. Now let's talk about what happens when we're given a vaccine. All right? Here we go. Go to the next one. So in this case, we're now going to move into vaccine-induced antibodies. As he said, they're long-lived. They don't go away. This isn't a drug that's going to wear off 2 days from now. We say, you know what? You had an allergic reaction. We're not going to do that drug anymore. It is in you forever. There's no getting this thing out. And what did it just do? It created what he called specific antibodies. Specific antibodies is now what we're going to discuss. So now in this scenario playing football, essentially everyone on the team has been told, you're looking for X. The antibody created, in this case, for the spike protein of SARS-CoV-2 that we first saw at the very beginning before there's any variants, our vaccine is going to make you fight that really well. So how does that work? Well, it's great. The coach basically said, I know for a fact that X, the running back back there, is going to get the ball. So everyone on the team key on X. Great. So X gets the ball. Boom, comes through. It doesn't matter, man. They're all going to jump in there. Yeehaw! Yay, the vaccine's awesome. It totally it stopped the virus. Okay? But now here is the problem he's talking about. This entire team can only respond to X. It only understands it as a specific. It's an antibody specific to the virus it's looking for. So what happens if Y gets the ball? What if the team, they know? It doesn't matter. The coach said it was going to be X. It doesn't matter. Y gets the ball. Y comes around. Boom, goes through here. Can go anywhere they want. X does nothing. Boom, win. We're in the end zone. We just won. Virus wins the whole game. Because no one on the team was waiting for X, was planned for X. In fact, they were told, don't go near X. I mean, don't go near Y. Okay? All right. But here's something that I didn't understand. I understood that, and we've talked about that basically on the show, not in this way. But it goes one step further, and this is what I think. Oh, I actually did that wrong. Hold on one second. Boom. Bam. Here we go. All right. Here's what I did not understand about the immune system last week that I do now. When he says that the vaccine-induced antibodies are long-lived, it means they're going to be there forever. He also basically explains that they are more robust. The virus-specific antibodies, the specific ones, they're more robust, and they outcompete your non-specific natural immune antibodies. So in this case, you do have some natural non-specific antibodies in there that could handle any one of the variants. But the problem is these guys are bullies. They're bigger. They're stronger. They're more, you know, specific, and they're ready to do their job. So if Y gets the ball and starts coming around, our non-specific antibody is going to want to jump in there. Unfortunately, our vaccine-induced is going to push this out of the way and become a blocker to make sure that that antibody or that virus gets all the way in and wins and gets the touchdown and could possibly leave you dead. This vaccine is bullying away your remaining natural immune system. You do have these, but they're never going to work again. Do you realize how horrifying this is? Now think about the hundreds of millions of people that are lining up around the world, that are lined up outside of stadiums right now because CNN and Tony Fauci just said, I love this vaccine. Well, Geert here, one of the leading scientists in vaccine and immunology in the world, is telling you everybody getting the vaccine is destroying their innate immune system. Those immune antibodies that were non-specific, that could have handled any of those thousands of variants we just saw you. They're designed for it. By being vaccinated, you just assured yourself that there are no antibodies inside of you to fight the variants. So if we have strayed far enough away from the vaccine-induced variant that we were looking at, the original spike protein, everyone that is vaccinated is now in horrible, horrible trouble. They're going to be attacked by variants, and their bodies will not mount a defense. We are talking about carnage like we've never seen. He's going to get into more detail. Take a look at this.
When I was looking,
this is it.
Kill their host, they don't move on. Then the evolution, they want to move on, so they stop killing their host. What he's saying is this isn't a natural pandemic. We have inserted ourselves here. We are now inserting a mechanism that we're teaching it to actually go the opposite direction. It's getting more deadly, and the way we're doing it, the other one will not compete. It's not going to move in the direction that a natural virus does because we're not acting naturally. We are putting immense pressure on it with an underperforming vaccine that is going to turn it into a Hulk. And his concern is that it will become so virulent and so deadly, there is nothing we can do to stop it. Now, listen to this.
I've seen the question many times, and quite frankly, I get asked the questions. We're coming to a point where people are going to have to take these vaccines. Well, that looks as though it's the reality, either in the context of work or in the context of travel. Based on what you're saying, they're in a lose-lose situation. What does this mean?
Well, what does it mean is very clear. It's very clear what it is going to mean. So let's consider the consequences of this, both at the population level and at an individual level. Because I would well understand if it, for the population it's maybe not the best thing to do, but, you know, on an individual level, it's still okay. Yeah, then it's not an easy, that's not an easy question. But as a matter of fact, it's exactly the opposite. Well, it's not the opposite, it is detrimental, both on a population level as on an individual level. And I'm telling you why. I think the population level, I explained to you, we are increasingly facing highly infectious strains that already right now we cannot control, because basically what we are doing is that we are turning, when we vaccinate somebody, we are turning this person in a potential asymptomatic carrier that is shedding the virus. But at an individual level, I just told you that if you have these antibodies and at some point, and I'm sure this will, people can challenge me on this, but you know, reality will prove it. I think we are very close to vaccine resistance right now. And it's not for nothing that already people start developing, you know, new vaccines against the strains, etc. But what I was saying is that, okay, if you miss the shoot, okay, you could say nothing has happened. No. You are at the same time losing the most precious part of your immune system that you could ever imagine of. And that is your innate immune system. Because the innate antibodies, the natural antibodies, the secretory IgMs, will be outcompeted by these antigen-specific antibodies for binding to the virus. And that will be long-lived. That is a long-lived suppression, and you lose every protection against any viral variant or coronavirus variant, etc. So this means that you are left just with no single immune response with your of the younger generation. I mean, it's just impossible what we are doing. We don't understand the pandemic. We have been turning it in an artificial pandemic. Who can explain where all of a sudden all this highly infectious strain come from? Nobody can explain this. I can explain it, but we have not been seeing this during previous pandemics. During natural pandemics, we have not been seeing it, because at every single time there was, the immunity was low enough so that the virus didn't need to escape.
So basically, what he's saying is, not only is it going to ruin the innate immune system of people who took the vaccine, but they're going to start shedding this new variant. And so then what's going to happen is people who didn't take the vaccine are going to be attacked by this robust hulk of a vaccine. Now, you have a better chance of surviving it than a person who took the vaccine, but it could be deadly. And if you're not up on your vitamins and you don't know about ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine, which works also, they lied about that, it can kill many, many people. So this looks like a nightmare scenario for us. You better pay attention, because everybody's life's going to change here. Our economy, everything. And I just want to come out of this and just show you one more thing, if you would. I don't want that. Let's go. Oops, I lost my Skype. Sorry. It's another doctor. There's another warning, bolster this up. I want to read you, as soon as this thing loads. I don't want Gary John. Hang on just a minute, I'll find it. Wait a moment, I want Gary. Excuse Okay, I sent this out earlier. And I don't know if you're going to be able to read it, but we will try to do this so that you can... Okay, I'm sure you can't see this. Mike Yadin, ex-chief scientist of Pfizer, has stated that it is now too late to save any person who has been injected with any COVID-19 vaccine. He argues that those who have not yet been injected with the deadly compound to fight for the continuation of humans and the lives of their children. The world-acclaimed immunologist goes on to outline the process, which he says will kill the vast majority of people now alive. Immediately upon receipt of the first injection, around 0.8% of people die within 2 weeks. The survivors have a life expectancy of 2 years on average, but this is decreased with every top-up or booster injection. Supplemental vaccines are in development to cause degradation of specific organs, including heart, lungs, and brain. Having been intimately acquainted with the functioning and goals of research and development of the pharmaceutical giant Pfizer for 2 decades, Professor Yerdan states that the final goal of the currently administered regime of vaccine can only be a mass depopulation event. Yeah, think Bill Gates and Fauci, which will make all the world wars combined seem like a Mickey Mouse production. Billions are already condemned to certain unchangeable, agonizing deaths. Each person who has received the injection will certainly die prematurely, and 3 years is a generous estimate for how long they can expect to remain alive. And there's a URL under there, Life something news, exclusive. Anyway, I guess that's could lead to your death. So anyway, let me get out of this screen and. Let me stop my screen share here and get back to normal stuff here. Okay, I guess we're back. So, there's a couple things that bear mentioning, and then I've got a question I want to ask Brent on the legalities of some of this stuff. Right now, they're telling people, well, first of all, they cannot force you to take this vaccination because it's experimental. And the government cannot enforce any experimental medical procedure on people. And that was established during the Nuremberg Code. And it's a worldwide agreed upon law. So if it's experimental, they can't force you to take it. This vaccine, number one, it is experimental, and it's only supposed to be administered under emergency situations and while there's a pandemic, and only if they don't have therapeutics. Every day they find out new drugs that work on regular COVID-19. Ivermectin being one, hydroxychloroquine being another one. Vitamin D3 being the other one. Look, if you live above the 35th parallel, you have to supplement D3 because we don't get enough sunlight above the 35th parallel. So that's New York, you know, right? You draw a line through the center of the country and dip it down, and everything above that line, it's about midsection, you know, it goes through Pennsylvania and, you know, a little bit south. Probably, you know, West Virginia, you know, anything above that, you have depleted rates of vitamin D3, and that's why we have the flu season. They know this. They know that we catch the flu up here in the Northeast and the Northwest and all that because we don't have enough sunlight. So you have to supplement. That's a given fact, and we know that now. And they have never told us. Anyway, the long and the short of it is that they cannot force you. But the way that they're going to force you is they're going to tell you that you can't work here, you can't shop here. They're going to let the private sector do it. And I don't believe that that's acceptable because they're putting something on me that is violating my unalienable rights, and they're telling me that this is a policy, but it's a, something that affects my health. Same thing with wearing a mask. I don't believe that under the guise of being a private business and having a policy that we want everybody to wear masks, that they can push that on me, especially when the science, the real science, says that it's bad and it doesn't work. So there's, we have to examine the law and take these lawsuits out on all these people, because, and believe me, there's going to be lawsuits because everybody's going to understand what happened after a point. But I think the question is you know, they're holding us hostage, saying you won't be able to do these things. Now, I heard something the other day that, you know, California has a lot of alternative health people, and now they're apparently they're under that same guise. If a business can force you to do something and you just don't go there if you don't want to do it, but pretty soon you can't shop and you can't buy and you can't sell. It almost sounds like a Bible prediction. Unless you take the mark, the vaccine, you won't buy or sell. But what they're doing is they understand this whole business with this vaccine, and they realize that if they let people come in that have taken the vaccine and somebody catches a shedded, mutated virus from one of these people, they're going to be liable, and their insurance companies aren't going to cover them because it's a experimental vaccine. So the new thing now is the exact opposite you're going to see happen. When people understand the mechanism of this thing, you're going to see signs that if you're vaccinated, you can't come in. And if they find that you came in, they'll probably be able to prosecute you. We're going to go back to biblical days when the lepers used to have a bell on them and they had to ring it and they had to stay so many feet apart. You know, there's nothing new in this world, but this is worldwide. That's what's new. And it's going to be terrible. I'm sorry. But it's already backfiring, and so I don't know where we're going to go, and I don't know what the law is on this. I know anything that's experimental. See, right now, they don't even have a right to give it anymore because we are not in a pandemic. The numbers have dropped so low, and we have proven therapeutics for the natural, for the Corona-19 virus. We know that it works. As a matter of fact, they have these things that I'm telling you about, when they combine them with the vitamins and everything, it's a 98% success rate. 98. You know, and so you don't get much better than that. Of course, if you're elderly or, you know, and you got other committing problems like certain diseases, chronic diseases, yes, you're going to be more at risk. But there's going to be lots and lots of lawsuits, and I don't believe any business can really force you to do what they want like that, because most of them are corporations, which means they're fictions of the state, which means they fall under the civil law, civil rights. All this Roman civil law is going to come back and hang them. So I think by them telling me that I have to do this, I have to wear a mask, I have to take a vaccine, That's a violation of my civil rights. I mean, I don't believe that I have civil rights. I have rights that come from God. But under their system, they've shackled themselves. They're not going to be able to defend this. And I don't know what you think about that, Brent, but if you want to say a couple words about that, go ahead. I'll give the floor.
I'll give you a breather for a minute.
Yeah.
This is Brent Allen Winters. CommonLawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. I want to read something here. We can talk about law. There are always two things that are involved when you ask a lawyer a question, and that is, what is the law? And second is, what is reality? Which is saying, what are the courts really going to do, regardless of what the law says? Because we discover over time that the courts don't follow the law. They won't even hear the cases. So here's the reality of the matter. I'm reading from John chapter 9, famous passage of the Bible, And leading by, verse 1, I'm reading from the Winterized version, he saw a man blind out of birth, and his disciples asked him, this is asking Jesus Christ, spelling it out, learned teacher, who broke the law, this man or his parents, so that he should be born blind? And the Savior answered, neither has this man nor his parents broke law, but rather so that the would-be works wrought of God are clearly shown in him. For us it is fate to wrought the works wrought of the one having sent me. Well, it is day. Night comes whenever not even one man can work. While I am in the world order, I am the light of the world order. These things, having spoken, he spat. That means he spitted on the ground and made clay out of the spittle. And he besmeared his clay upon the eyes of the blind man. And he said to him, go, wash in the pool of Siloam, which is the meaning being unpacked. Gush forth. That's what Siloam means. It means to gush forth. The name of a spring and a well, a pool. He went away, therefore, and washed, and he came back seeing. So this blind man now sees. And the landholders, therefore, and the ones having gazed upon him at the first, the one that before had been a beggar, spelled it out. Is this not the one having sat and having begged? Others spelt it out and said, this is he. Others spelt it out and said, not at all, but rather he is like him. That one then spelt it out often, that I am. Therefore they said to him, how therefore were your eyes opened? That one answered and spelt it out. The man, the one being called Jesus, made clay and besmeared my eyes and said to me, go into the pool of gush forth, and wash. And having gone, therefore, and having washed, I looked up. And they said to him, where is that one? And he says, I know not. Well, they bring him into the Pharisees, the one formerly blind, in other words. Moreover, it was Sabbath day, in which the Savior made the clay and opened his eyes. Again, therefore, the Pharisees also asked him how he took hold of his sight. He said to them, he put clay on my eyes. And he said to them, he put clay on my eyes, and I washed, and I do see. Therefore, some out of the Pharisees spelled it out. This man is not from God, speaking of Jesus Christ, because he safeguards not the Sabbath day. Others spelled it out and said, how can a lawbreaker man like this do natural signs such as these? And a parting was among them. They disagreed. They were having a controversy, and they say again, therefore, to the blind man. See, they keep coming back to him. Now watch this. What say you about him? That means, what do you say about Jesus Christ, the man that took your blindness away and made you see? Because your eyes he opened, and that one born blind said, moreover, that he is a prophet. Therefore the Judaics believed not about him that he had been blind and got sight until they called his parents, his mother and father, of the one having taken hold of sight. And they asked them, we're getting to the point here, now watch me, and they asked them, spelling it out, is this your son of whom you all say that was born blind? Therefore, right now he sees. His parents, therefore, spelt it out. We know by evidence that he is our son. They're trying to get out of this, see? You'll see why in just a minute. We know he's our son. That much we know. And that he was born blind. We ain't disputing that. However, How he now sees, we know not by any evidence, or who has opened his eyes, we know not by evidence. Now listen to this. They said, he is of age, you ask him. He shall talk about himself. His parents spell out these things. Now here it is. This is the point. His parents spelt out these things because they shied from the Judaics. For in fact, already now, the Judaics had put together that if any man might acknowledge Messiah, he should be put out from the Jewry meeting place, the synagogue. He should be put out from the synagogue. What does that mean? That means you can't no more buy or sell. That's what that means. That means you'll starve to death. That means you can't go to the grocery store. You can't go to the butcher shop. They won't take your money. These are some powerful, powerful critters here, these Judaics. They controlled everything. You either do what they said, and there was no law that said you couldn't eat, but it was that pressure from the private sector of which Gerard spoke just a little bit ago. We see it now, don't we? The corporate world, Walmart. Walmart won't let you in. The restaurants, the certain restaurants, McDonald's won't let you in unless you got a mask on, and or they'll just let you pick up. I talked to a fellow the other day who delivers. He's one of these door dashers. Makes about, well, he makes pretty good money, $400 a week or something, delivering, doing home deliveries. He went to McDonald's. He's an older fellow, up in his 70s. Got physical problems. He went to McDonald's. He sat down away from the counter to await the delivery they were giving him, delivery. And they said, you got to put a mask on or get out. He said, I can't put a mask on. I have a respiratory problem. Well, then you got to get out. Well, then, but I've got deliveries I've committed to making. Well, that's too bad for you. Boy, they get ugly about it. Real ugly. That's not the government doing that. That's the corporate world. They were, or he was, being, as it were, like this blind man and his mother and father, being put out of the synagogue. You can't buy or sell anymore. I had a friend at home, still have a friend at home. I buy milk and eggs from him. He milks cows, got a herd of 25. He makes yogurt, salted and unsalted. He makes raw butter, salted and unsalted. He makes yogurt. He sells cream by the quart for $6. At that rate, I eat the whole quart at a time. I really do. It's that good. You can even make ice cream out of it. But he makes all that stuff. He's not an Amishman. Or as they say there, Amishman. He's not an Amishman. I say Amish when I talk to other people. Not around there. They know who I'm talking about. This isn't in Pennsylvania. These people migrated in. They call themselves Amish. Same bunch. But he got into a little bit of a disagreement with the Amish down at the schoolhouse, a quarter mile down the road, the Amish school. He started reading his Bible, and he started asking questions. He started reading his Bible, this Amishman. He had 8 children at the time, milking 25 cows. He started asking questions. Well, they didn't like him asking questions. He was asking, why is it that we can't wear buttons on our trousers and have to use safety pins, and the other Amishmen at the other settlements can use buttons? Well, they didn't feel they were obliged to answer that question. They answered, no man. He said, is this really necessary? They didn't like that either. So what did they do? They did the same thing these Judaics. These Judaics did to this blind man, formerly blind man, and his family. These Amishmen, as it were, put him out of the synagogue. Yeah, they wouldn't buy his milk anymore. And they wouldn't sell him anything anymore either. And it's kind of a closed community, buying and selling. Well, that, you say, he could go do business with other people. Well, it's not that easy if you don't know other people. I got to know him. And me and my friend, the one that got shut out of McDonald's for not wearing a mask, we started buying his milk and his butter and his eggs and his cheese and his yogurt and his cream. And he stumbled along and desperate, about to starve to death, thought he was. Of course, you think if you're milking cows, you ought to have something to eat. But still, it worried him. He got a driver's license, bought himself a van, and started making deliveries to the, what they call at home, they call them the English. That's the non-Amish. They call them the English. He started making deliveries. Well, to make a long story short, it comes out good in the end. Dr. McCullough bought his dairy herd and paid him to milk the cows. He made more money doing that than he did when he had his own herd. Nothing really changed, just a little paperwork. And McCullough also provided a massive market for him. So God took care of him. He read his Bible. They threw him out of the synagogue. And the Gentiles, well, that's their word for the other nations is English. You know, the Jews say Gentile or Goy or Goyim, and they say English. So he had the same thing happen to him. It is the way of the evil empire to make it so that people that disagree with the powers that be can't buy or sell. But rest easy. Rest assured. Just like my former Amish friend, Nathaniel, and like this blind man, we don't know that they starved to death. We have no indication of it. But I fully believe the Bible to be true when it says, when the psalmist says that, David says that, I have not seen your people begging bread. So whatever happens with all this lawlessness, you are the apple of your maker's eye. Apple, that's what it says. That's an old English translation of the word pupil, because in old English they used to call the pupil of the eye the apple of the eye. And the apple of the eye is the most sensitive, exposed member of your body. And not only that, is it the most sensitive. It is the most instinctively protected, the most instinctively protected member of your body. Just try tossing somebody at something at somebody's face, like a wadded up piece of paper. They'll blink or turn their head away. They won't have to think about it. They'll throw their hand up instinctively if something's coming toward their eye. Well, that's what God says you are to him. You're as sensitive to his protection as the exposed pupil. This is an analogy, It's as though you were the exposed pupil of your maker's eye. And if you're thrown out of the synagogue, if they won't let you in the restaurants or the grocery stores, God will feed you. That's what he says. Now, I can believe that or believe my fears. I have two choices. I have found over the years that I can believe that. He's never failed me. And I predict, it's my prediction, I'm not a prophet, predictor of probabilities on the evidence of my own life, what I've seen in others, what I read, these stories I'm telling you, they're true stories, that he'll see to your feeding. But it is no kidding. It's not like this is new. Jesus Christ demonstrates it for us right here. Now, that was my comment about that, Gerard. I had another thing when the time comes prepared, but maybe that was enough. Back to you.
Well, I want to make a comment or two on what you just said. That fellow that they threw out with the mask of when he was going to deliver the McDonald's, uh-huh. And he said, I can't wear a mask. I have a condition. Mm-hmm. Well, the law has provision for that. But mm-hmm. nobody seems to want to enforce that portion of it. And the other thing is they're not allowed to ask you what that condition is.
Mm-hmm.
Because
that's right.
According to HIPAA, it's none of their damn business.
But so, if you... Go ahead.
So if you claim that you have a condition... They're not supposed to question that. If you walk in there without a mask, they say, put one on. You say, I can't. That's the end of conversation right there. Now, I don't understand why the police officers and stuff, when they call police officers, and ultimately, if you, we have a couple that, that disobeyed that and they made them call the police officers or they arrested them, and, and we're helping them fight their case, she's died in between because she had lung cancer at the time, which really makes them the prosecutor very scared now. Because it was obvious she had a condition, and they didn't even, they actually took the groceries out of their car and put them back on the shelf. And this guy did it purposely because neither one of them would wear a mask. They both had problems. And they had problems with the fact of what the mask was, and they couldn't shop. They couldn't buy, and they couldn't sell. And they went out that day, they said, let's get arrested, because he was sick of it. But, and, you know... this is the law, but yet they're picking and choosing what part of the law they enforce. That's how sick we are.
No, that's how sick we are, and that was the point. And I'm glad you brought that up again, because it can come back around and reiterate. There are two things we always must consider. What is the law, which you have correctly recited, but what is reality? Because when the powers that be, and the corporate powers that be, and that's what they are, it won't enforce law, won't even recognize. I have friends, and I know a doctor. I know the doctor that gave them their little signed piece of paper from the doctor that says they're exempt medically from wearing a mask. And on that signed piece of paper, it gives not the reason. Matter of fact, it says no reason must be given. This is between the doctor and the patient. And the courts won't acknowledge that. The courts won't acknowledge that, where this person is. And also, the fast food restaurants won't acknowledge it. So you can call the sheriff. The sheriff is ignorant and is also afraid. He doesn't want to get thrown out of the synagogue. That's the reality we're dealing with. So I've concluded, of course, it's right to assert your rights always. But be prepared to deal with the problem when those that are sworn to enforce the law won't do it. We can't even get the Supreme Court of the United States to listen to a fundamental dispute over the most massive election fraud the world has ever known, not only in our country, but in other countries. So blatantly obvious that it's indisputable. I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I'm not the dumbest, and I know that there's election fraud. The courts won't listen to that. Why do we think they're going to listen to these cases about face masks? Now, we know in Michigan, the courts there have consistently ruled against the governor. They call it in Michigan, the gals in Michigan call them the trilogy of witches. The governor, the secretary of state, and the attorney general. I just call them Jezebels. That gets it. Jezebel. If you don't know who Jezebel is, go look her up. Then you'll know what we're talking about. But I agree, of course, it's good, and we need to know the law, and I'm glad you brought it up, but also we got to deal with reality, and God's in control. My mother texted me this morning, and on the telephone, and I texted her back, and she said, I don't know, Brent. She said, I've been reading Genesis chapter 1, chapter 1, verse 1. I said, chapter 1, verse 1? I said, everybody knows what that says. What are you reading that for? She said, well, it just reminds me that God is in control of all this foolishness. I said, okay, is that good? And she said, sure, it's good. Well, it reminded me, too, the simplicity of that simple verse of who he is and that he has made all things. And if he's done that, he's watching it all, and he's looking out after us. So back to you, Gerard.
Well, what I see here, and think, just like the fact that now they're coming to the realization they don't want vaccinated people in their business, which is the exact opposite of what it was supposed to be, you know, turning it on its head. But if you go through the Bible and the different plagues that God sent man, you know, in Noah's time, he killed everybody except for one family, right?
Right.
Then during Exodus, he told them, paint the blood of the lamb over the door.
Mm-hmm.
And that angel of death would pass over. That was a specific plague for specific people. Well, I see this pandemic as a specific plague. And basically, it's a specific plague against all those people that are sheep that will do anything the government says. So now they're removing their genes from the gene pool. So who's going to be left? Us craggy people that refuse to take vaccines, you know, that are generally patriotic and patriots and self-sufficient. And you know, vaccine, you do have a choice. But, of course, like you said, maybe you don't. But you got to. That's where you got to become more self-sufficient and stand on your own two feet.
I read recently that they're, of course, always trying to force it on their armed forces first in the Marine Corps. The statistics in the Marine Corps is that 40% of the Marine Corps refuses to take this so-called vaccination. Now that was good news.
Thank God, because we're going to be left with no military otherwise.
No Marine Corps thing.
I mean, China come marching through, you know?
Yeah. But I would encourage, because apparently the government doesn't feel like they can even enforce this on the armed forces.
But they can't. They can't. No, they can't, because it's already been established that an experimental, you know, because of Hitler and the Nuremberg, that's a very strong one. And I just want to say another point before I forget is all these healthcare workers that are jabbing people, they're going to go up in a trial at some point if we get our courts back and our constitutional government. They're all going to be guilty of genocide, because they can't say I didn't know, because they're supposed to have those people sign off that it's experimental. They're supposed to tell them that it's experimental and that they have a choice. And if they're not telling them that, then they're just like those soldiers that they said, well, you shot unarmed prisoners. And they said, well, we were following orders. They said, that's nice. Step up to the gallows.
Mm-hmm.
So all these people that think that they can just give this shot, even whether they agree with it or don't agree with it, if they're not informing the people and they're not getting their consent, they're committing a crime. They're committing genocide. Anyway, I just wanted to say that.
I'm glad you did. Well, Gerard, do you want me to talk about something else, or were you going to continue? Are you going to take questions now? Have you done that?
Yeah, we have two. We got two people in the thing. Let me get them, and then if I get through them, then you can go ahead and do your planned lesson.
No hurry. I've done enough talking. If I don't get to it,
okay. Yeah, I feel like I've done enough too, but I don't know. John didn't want me to take the whole night on this. You know, just don't get carried away. But to me. Uh-huh. This is a current event that's affecting all of us, and this information is so important. If I can prevent one person or two people to not take this stupid vaccine, then I feel like I did something good. You know, I think it's so important, and in a certain sense, it is a liberty. It is a liberty thing. It is what we do. It does really need to be litigated. And, you know, and it needs to be litigated in a lawful way, not in a legal way, in a lawful way. But anyway, I'm gonna go ahead and open up Aslu and take her question, hopefully. Go ahead, Aslu.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh. Yes, I do have a question tonight. I just received a answer for my affidavit I sent out to Kansas for the tax they say I owe that I didn't owe. Can I read what they sent, please? It's not that.
Yeah, please. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Okay, it's a notice of intent to use your federal payment to pay your Kansas debt. And then it say, if you do not pay the total amount due within 60 days from the day of this notice, we will submit the unpaid balance to the United States Department of Treasury and the Treasury Offset Program. Any federal payments you receive may be applied toward the balance due, including all federal fees until your debt is paid in full. And then they send me a voucher on the bottom of it, you know, with the amount. and they said to pay my debt and within 60 days. So.
And meanwhile, they didn't send you some of the other stuff you asked for, right?
Nope, they didn't send what I request. The form 4490 and 56.
Right.
Yes.
Right, the fiduciary responsibility.
I request that specifically, and I said on the last affidavit, until you prove your claim,
I think it bears repeating. They're trying to bully you and scare you, and
yeah,
they obviously still feel confident that there's judges that are going to uphold their end. But you know, if somebody, I don't know if Brent wants to come in on some of this. If they don't give you a bill of particulars and show where you owe it, you know, the 4450 and the other one, they don't really have a claim. They don't, and I'm sure there's no signed affidavit by anybody.
Nope, not that I know of it.
Yeah, so.
And they didn't send me anything that I request. I kept sending them the form, the 4490 and the 56, every time I send an affidavit. But they respond the same, respond with a different name on the of the person and a different case number. On it.
How much is how much they say in you owe?
It's $19.25 and 18 cents.
$1,925. $1,925.
Right.
Oh, I see. Did you have a hint that it was coming?
Did I have a what?
Did you have a hint that that amount was owed?
She's been fighting them for a while, haven't you?
I've been fighting for a while now. I've been sending affidavits, but they never send what I, you know.
When was the first time? When was your first communication with them when they told you you owed back taxes?
That was last year. I believe it was July.
So, Brent, since last July, and she's asked them for many, many things, and they haven't supplied even one.
Well, the IRS traditionally won't answer any questions and won't respond to anything you send them. But everything you send them, they will file in hopes that they can use it against you later. That's important to keep in mind. You're not dealing with people that's going to read anything you send them. I advise people, don't send them anything. They're just going to use it against you. Use your right to remain silent. It's always better to talk than not to talk. It'd be like throwing pearls down in front of a pig in a hog lot. They're just going to trample them into the mud. They don't see the value in pearls. And if you send them an affidavit, no, they're dodos. They won't have a clue what you're talking about, and they don't care. And here's why they don't care. They get paid either way. And they get paid quite a bit, I might add. And then there's some of them, I think it's clear, that they get kickbacks for what they collect. We're talking about a nasty bunch. We'd be better off. We were talking with my friend here recently. We'd be better off in America if the Costa Nostra, which gained power back in the 1920s, picked up steam. And as a symbolic ending of it all, in 1985, John Gotti was sent to prison. They kept more order in the cities. Now the government, Rudy Giuliani, spearheading those prosecutions that took the power away from the Italian mafia and gave it to the United States government. That's what we've got now. And we had it all along to varying degrees, but at least with those fellows, they kept it all amongst themselves. If somebody had to be killed or they thought they did, they didn't go out killing other people. Well, this is the way that the organization of crime we got now, the one we're dealing with in Washington, D.C., they don't confine it to themselves. They are indiscriminate about who they hurt. And so they send that out. It's an intimidation tactic, absolutely, and they want you to respond to it. Now, it may be that it won't go anywhere, but you're dealing with a grizzly bear. You know, nobody knows. And I've read articles and talked to people that have been around them. Nobody knows for sure why a grizzly bear attacks, except
we can see that they attack if they think you're threatening their cubs. Yeah, that's true. But grizzly bears attack for a lot of other reasons, and people don't know why. But even more importantly, and this is the greater mystery, why do they stop their attack and just leave people half dead or take one or two swipes at them or sometimes kill them, but they'll leave off their attack? Well, that's the way the government is. You don't always know why they attack, and then sometimes they just walk away, but for sure they're never going to write you a letter and tell you, well, we're done with you now, so relax. They don't do that. They're like the grizzly bear. They just leave, and they may come back. You don't know. Now, I'm telling you as much as I know about it. I've had some of these kind of cases, and I was going to talk about cross-examination in a tax case, cross-examination in a tax case and how to deal with it. The amount of money that they're looking for from you, they're just hoping you'll pay it without asking questions. They make a lot of money sending demand letters to people that don't owe them any taxes. I think that's clear. But you don't owe that much. Or no, I don't know that you owe anything, but they're not saying you owe that much. And if you ignore them, they may go away. But then again, they may not. So just stand ready. And we live in that kind of uncertainty. But one great defense against things like that is if you don't own anything. If you don't own anything, nobody can take anything from you. It's important, and I say this for the benefit of everybody that's listening, not just you, but anybody else. You're better off to own nothing and control it all. Own nothing, but control all of what is for your benefit. That's why we say it's good to be the beneficiary of a trust, because you don't own anything, but you enjoy the benefits of the entrusted property.
And there's a song about that.
What is it?
You're right. That song is freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose.
That's right, Gerard.
So what are you suggesting I do?
Look, I wouldn't know. Brent wouldn't know, and I wouldn't know. Like he's saying, they may just go away because they got to give it to the Treasury. I'm going to give you some of my thoughts on that, too, from my experience of dealing with the IRS. I know for a fact that they made a law a number of years ago because the IRS was getting very overhanded and it got crazy, and Congress said, look, it, you guys at the Treasury Department can't be going out and collecting this small amount of tax from these small people, because we've discovered that you're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to collect, like from you, $1,900. If you dig your heels in, they're supposed to drop that debt. They're not supposed to be spending our resources on that. So my instincts are that they will probably not try to collect it. I don't know if you own a house or whatever. Now, there's other people that...
I think they did that because they thought that we sold the house that was foreclosed. So,
right. So they're assuming. And you know, they'll always make a ridiculous amount hoping to get you off your feet. Like, we got somebody that was a contractor, and he got it. The insurance company wrote a check with his name on it and the owner's name. And it was like a $200,000 check. And then as he went through the job, I don't know, they had a falling out or whatever. He had to sign the check in order to have it cashed, him and the homeowner. But as it turned out, he only did about $5,000 worth of work for the guy, and the guy got a different construction manager. Well, the IRS went after this fellow for the total amount, the total two-something. So he wrote back, he said, look, I didn't get that money, and it was written in both of our names, and I only made $4,000 on the job, and then he fired me, and I got somebody else. But even if that didn't happen, how could you write me the whole thing? Because it's in my name and his name, so the most I could have got was half of it. Well, that was the wrong thing to say. You know what they did, don't you? They readjusted the thing, and they said, okay, so you owe us. $105,000 or $110,000, just like that.
Wow.
You know, they don't care. But I don't believe that they're supposed to be collecting that kind of a debt from somebody that doesn't have the resources to pay it. Like Brent says, if you don't own anything, they really can't get you anything. And the other method is I also know that somebody else in LA had trouble with them, and they sued everybody. They sued each agent. They sued everybody that touched everything, including the bank that they sent they closed his account down. And I went there to the hearing, and there was about 9 lawyers, the bank's lawyers, this lawyer, that lawyer. But anyway, they ended up throwing the case out because they don't have the stomach for that. So I'm not telling you to sue everybody that touched it, but it is a strategy, because you can't sue the IRS, you can't sue the U.S. government, but you can sue those people that sign the forms, because they're acting outside of their authority. And they didn't give you the forms to show you that you actually owed the money. They didn't give you a bill, basically. They didn't give you your form 56 and 40, whatever it is, right?
So I didn't receive either.
No, so they haven't established fiduciary authority over you.
No, they didn't.
And if you let it go, and you know, I would insist that I get that and tell them, look, you have no bill of particulars. You didn't supply anything. I don't own anything.
Right, and
this is a waste of the taxpayers' time, and I have no intention of paying this, and you cannot even prove to me that I own it. But even if you proved it to me, I don't have it to pay. That's all. And I think if the Treasury Department gets this, they're not going to even take 2 agents and put them in a car and have them come out to your house, because the Treasury Department is the enforcement arm. And as far as I can see, the other thing is they're bankrupt. They have no authority whatsoever right now, because they're operating under bankruptcy. And you might even want to say that. You might say, and I understand that the federal government is bankrupt, so therefore you have no jurisdiction and no authority.
Right. Okay.
I don't want to
just not respond.
No. That's right.
That I consent to the debt, you know. And so I think I'll just be. We sent the affidavit, that last one I got, put a little bit more on that, like that, that bankruptcy, and then sent it back then.
Now, Brent, I cut you off. I'm sorry. Brent was saying something, and I cut him off mid-sentence, so maybe you want to hear what he has to say, too.
Okay. Oh, I didn't know. I didn't know I was trying to say something, but... If I was, I don't remember what it was, Gerard.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I appreciate, guys. Thank you for the advice and help. You know, we appreciate you all.
Oh, I know what it was now. I do know what it was. I had a client. This is the madness of the taxing system. This is in California, the taxing system in California. And they came out here just a few years ago and said, anybody that's got a license to do business, whether you're a roofer, an electrician, a nurse, a lawyer, anybody that's got a license, they didn't really tell anybody they were going to do this. They just said, for instance, my client's a nurse. So she hadn't worked in California, had moved to another state, hadn't been there in 10, 15 years. And they... because her license is in California, they said that if she's a nurse, she would have worked X number of hours per week, per month, per year, and would have made this much money in the year, and so they sent her a bill for taxes on that much income.
And Even though she didn't work.
Didn't work, no. It wasn't even in the state. And then, when they didn't hear back from her, they went into her bank account, which she still had one in California because she had a family there, and took a few $1,000, whatever was there, and went to a CPA friend who was pretty aggressive. He said, no, that's against the law. He said, I know how to get that back. And he got it back just by saying, hey, send this money back. That surprised me. He made it look pretty easy. He knew the right people or something, and he did that pretty regularly. But that's over the top. It just shows you that government is dangerous. And the more that we're stupid enough to give them power, any kind of power, they're going to use it on us. So people say, well, you're an extremist, Brent, because I say that government only has two functions, armed defense and providing courts so we can resolve our differences. Mm-hmm. I don't think that those people that complain against me being extremist, they call me an extremist, but I don't think that my point of view is going to put much of a dent in the other side, the ones that want big government. And the only way big government, monstrous government, dangerous government can be slowed down is if we come back to basics and say, no, no more, just this much, armed defense, and even there should be limits. I was talking to a fellow the other day, and we were saying, what do we need the Air Force for? We don't need the Air Force. The Navy has a bigger Air Force than the Air Force anyway. And not only that, here's the real reason. The Constitution of the United States nowhere authorizes an Air Force. You say, well, Brent, shouldn't we have airplanes? Yes. The Army will take care of that. The Army took care of it until really very recently, until my lifetime. The Army Air Corps was our Air Force, and the Navy had a bigger, and still has a bigger Air Force than the Army. Why do we need to have a separate service? That's the kind of madness that destroys us. It's lawlessness. It's meaninglessness. It's just another bureaucracy. That's all it is. Worthless as tits on a boar hog. We don't need it. We got everything we need. We need to follow the law we have, national defense, armed defense, and courts. The state governments will take care of the rest of it. We may have a little more freedom that way. There's nothing wrong. You know, what people call extremism in most cases is not extreme at all. How can you have too much virtue? Is it possible to have too much virtue? Who was it that said, I'm all for moderation, especially when it comes to moderation. We should be moderate about our moderation. That was one of the Marx brothers, I think. Yeah, I practice moderation with everything, especially moderation. Well, no, when it comes to what is right and what is lawful, there is no limit to how much we need. We need all we can get. And there's enough evil. Yeah, there's enough evil in this world just within our own selves that we don't have to worry about overdoing it. Well, thank you.
Amen. Amen to that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Have a good evening.
Thank you for checking in. Back to you, Gerard.
Oh, I had myself muted and I was talking.
Oh.
Anyway,
that.
Hey, our forefathers didn't even want a standing army. They said the Navy was enough. They argued about a standing army in a time without a declared war. They were worried about that. So those were some of the discussions. Maybe we need to take those discussions up again.
Oh, no question. The standing army. Congress is allowed, according to the Constitution, to raise money for a certain period of time. The Navy's different because the Navy, you can't raise a Navy in a matter of weeks or months like you can an Army, so they said the expenditures for the Navy can be long-term. It takes a long time to build a ship, to outfit it, to arm it, and to get sailors on it and get them trained. It's a whole different deal. So they have different standards for the armed forces on the seas and the armed forces on the land. I had a brother, still have a brother. He was in London during when they geared up for Desert Storm back in 1990, and he was at the Eisenhower Building downtown. And that's where the elite bigwigs meet, and he was at the meeting when all the admirals and generals got together and decided what they could do and couldn't do because they'd gotten orders, and the fellows in charge asked the other general officers of the Army, said, how long is it going to take you to get tooled up and ready? And they told them, whatever, a month or 2 months, I don't know, but it was a pretty long period of time. And then they turned to the admirals, this general turned to the admiral and said, how long will it take you to get ready for war? And these admirals said, what do you mean, how long will it take us to get ready? We're ready. We're at sea right now, armed and loaded.
We got alert fives on our aircraft carriers 24/7, have had for the last year, two, three, 4 years, however long we've been on. The Navy is always ready because it's the nature of the beast that they are that way. The Army, it comes and goes. They reduce their arms, their men, and so that's why the Constitution says that, and that hasn't changed. It's still that way. That was why I told that story, to say, no, the modern world hasn't changed the principles that were enforced and were needed to be paid attention to when the Constitution was written. We have more technology now, but the principles never change. The principles of privacy don't change. Oh, we have cell phones now. When I was a boy, we had party lines. Everybody knew our business. You knew who was. We knew who was listening. You know, Kate Smith. Kate Smith was always listening. My grandmother was always listening. And people complain now.
If you were slick, you could weaponize that.
Well, I could tell stories like that. If you want to spread lies, you knew. Yeah, that's right. We had a lot of fun in those days. But
yeah,
getting back to the principle of privacy was there, and the telephone company is a private company. The party lines, it wasn't the government that was spying on us. It was our neighbors. And, of course, we knew our neighbors, and we had fun with it. There's no difference now. Now we have cell phones. Is it the government that's spying on us? Well, some people say yes. The government controls the corporations that run the mass media. That is the difference. I think it is, and I think that just from my perspective now, I've tried to think some things through. For what it's worth, it seems to me that the corporations are the powers that be. They call themselves the private sector. They'll tell you they'll run you out of some of these chain businesses, whether they're it's Lowe's or Home Depot or whatever it is. Here's one, Trader Joe's. They've been pretty tough. They've run me out. I used to just walk in and they'd talk to me and I'd just keep walking. And now they noticed they couldn't run you out, so they have guards at the door. They just won't let you in, and then I'll say, well, what are you going to do? I'm nice about it. Don't think I'm belligerent. I'm not. I try to engage them in conversation and say, well, now, if I walk in right past you, are you going to grab me? Well, I know what the answer is. They'll say, no, I can't touch you. Well, that's right then. So why are you telling me this? Are you going to call the sheriff? Well, we don't know. Well, have you ever called the sheriff? No, haven't yet. Well, then why don't I just walk in and you relax? And if you're not going to call the sheriff, who cares? Well, I went in one restaurant and went through that. And they were nice to me. But they said, you know, the reason we do this, this was in Sparks. Well, it's right next to Reno, Nevada. They said, you know, we do this not because we want to. But there have been restaurants here that have been fined every time they catch somebody without a mask on coming in. They're fined $1,000, and they have their little Nazis around that'll pop in on you and do that. Now, I don't doubt that. But still, that's what they're doing, and it's the private sector. But again, we say it's the private sector. They say we're the private sector. We can do anything we want on our property. We can demand that you wear a mask. I don't believe that's true. I was going to mention a while ago, Gerard, Heart of Atlanta. Heart of Atlanta Hotel, a case from the civil rights movement way back in the early 1960s. Justice Douglas and Justice Black, the Bobbsey twins of the U.S. Supreme Court, they always ruled together, seemed like. Of course, they were appointed by the same communist. Not that I didn't like Black and Douglas. They wrote some good cases, but there's no question. Roosevelt's nothing but a low-down communist. People like to say, oh, no, he's not as bad. No, he was terrible. Terrible. And the hell, the hellishness, to spread the word a little, that he put on our country, well, my grandchildren won't see the end of it. And my father told me that. He said, my grandchildren, I can see it now. It just keeps going. Well, Heart of Atlanta Hotel is about a family of people that were traveling through Georgia, down through Atlanta, and their skin tone wasn't the same color as some of the other people, the people that owned the hotel. And they were tired, they didn't have a place to stay, and they went to the hotel to try to get a room, and that's right, they said, we don't serve your kind here, sorry.
And the case ended up in the Supreme Court of the United States, and it was a big hotel, 216 rooms. But this is one of the big cases you read in law school, the very first. And the court said, no, you can't do that. You may be private property, but once you fling your doors open to the public, you don't have the option of discrimination anymore. You don't have the option of discrimination. Well, if I go to Trader Joe's and they say I can't come in without a diaper on my head, they say I have to look like a bozo and a buffoon like the rest of the people that shop there, then I think Heart of Atlanta Hotel, and the cases, 660 some cases, the Supreme Court has quoted, and other federal courts have quoted this case over 600 times. And it stands for the idea that you can't discriminate. You can't discriminate, that means choose one over another, give one, let one come in and do business with him and not the other. Once you fling your doors open to the public and say, I'm open for business, I'm a hotel, I'm a grocery store, and then they discriminate unlawfully. Is there a difference between a man whose skin is not the same color as mine and me? Well, not when it comes to whether or not I have the duty to be unhassled when I travel. And I've talked to families that have migrated into my part of the world that came from Tennessee and Alabama, and I knew some of them. Later on, I didn't when I was growing up. We lived out on the farm. I didn't see anybody like that growing up. That wasn't part of my world, but I met some later, Terre Haute. And they said when they'd travel, they'd have to always make extra sandwiches, boiled eggs, and have something to eat because they couldn't stop and eat at a restaurant. Well, the Heart of Atlanta Hotel stopped all that, but does that mean that it only applies to people with different colored skin? The answer is no. Discrimination, unlawful discrimination. What if I have a medical condition and I don't want to wear a diaper on my head? What if I just am claustrophobic and I don't want to wear a diaper on my head? What if I believe, according to my religious conviction, that my Maker gave me the breath of life and I became a breathing soul? I believe that, by the way, with all of my heart. He gave me a gift called breath. Boy, do I love breathing. And I'll tell you what, air is a hard thing to do without. And if you ever get so you can't get at it the way you want to, it comes home to you real fast. And you say, thank you, Lord, that you gave me the breath of life. And then you keep my lungs going and you keep the air going and I can breathe. And I, by the way, I have a religious conviction, a deeply held and sincere and based on solid evidence even, although that's not always necessary. But I do, that my Maker wants me to breathe, and he doesn't want me to wear a diaper on my head, especially one that I know is laced with some kind of a varmint, a microscopic varmint. I saw some microscopic videos of this varmint on the masks. Yep. On the masks. You did too, Gerard?
Yeah, you know? They're nano.
Yeah, I'm not going to put that on my head. You want to kill yourself? I don't want you to either. Don't be so stupid. But people are. Well, anyway, that's the Heart of Atlanta Hotel is a good case, and I think it ought to come into play here. I haven't heard that will. Back to you.
Right. Well, I know I've done a couple things, and I try not to get arrested and stuff, but I had one guy that was really going off, and I told him, call the cops. I said, first of all, it's not a law, and that's the problem. That's the problem the cops have with it, mm-hmm. is that it's not by the legislator. It's an executive order, so technically it's not a law, and technically they can't really enforce it. You know, I mean, if you want to get down to it, it's administrative, and it's like, could be argued, it's really not a law that they can take you under the law. But what they do is they get the owner to say leave, and then they get you for trespassing. And that's an illegal conversion of the statute. You weren't trespassing. The door was open. I didn't break
that's
in.
That's right.
Like you said,
that's
you right. threw no. the door open. You can't use that trespassing statute because what are you saying? I broke in? Yeah. I mean, I don't know what the things for trespassing is, but it's a misapplication of that statute. And they the cops are learning this, and so they're very hesitant to come, because when they come and they enforce it, you know what? They're all liable. Every cop that if you take them to court and take a tort suit on them, they're all liable. Every one of them. Even the cash register person that took your groceries out of your cart and put them back on the shelf because the manager told them to do that.
Mm-hmm. And it's a violation fundamentally. To do that, according to the Supreme Court, it's a violation of the Interstate Commerce Clause. Because, again, once they fling their doors open, they can't pick and choose. And the federal government, the general government in Washington, D.C., has taken it upon themselves to keep the interstate commerce flowing. And if I can't go to California and go into Trader Joe's, and I can't, not as a practical matter, they'll hassle you to death. Well, that's a restriction of commerce between the states. Back to you, Gerard.
And the other thing, I'm losing my train of thought here. Let's see. I lost the thought, but there's another thing that comes into this mix as far as liability and enforcement, which they don't really have. And I lost the point, so I'll move on.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm anxious for these things to come up, but the evil empire is exceedingly clever. They've got the courts shut down as a practical de facto matter.
Right. You can't even bite.
No, boy, this is orchestrated. No man, I don't think, could have put this together. This is from the evil one himself, and the useful idiots. Useful idiots that he has working for him, don't know what they're doing. I talked to a fella today that said, well, I guess I'm going to break down and get the vaccination. And it surprised me. And I said, what for? He said, well, I got to come back. He's in another country. I got to come back to the States. And I reckon I'll have to fly. See, that's the casual way people are looking at this. And I would advise people not to be so casual about somebody sticking something. You don't have a clue what's in that thing.
Well, I would tell them, sign a release that says if anything happens to me, you'll be responsible, then I'll take it. They won't do it.
My brother, coming back to him, he's a retired naval officer. He was on a lot of ships. And he told me, he said this publicly, that's why I'm saying it, because he said it publicly. He never told me about it until he did say it publicly. He said, I never took a vaccination on board a ship. Every time they'd come out with one, I'd tell the old man, I'll be right in line behind the medical officer to take that new vaccination. But he said the medical officer never took it. Never. And because the medical officer didn't, he didn't either.
Oh, I know what I wanted to say. These businesses, these corporations that claim that, you know, that we could do this because we're this or that, they're all getting money from the federal government. Walmart gets several hundreds of millions of dollars a year, and that makes them a public corporation.
Yep.
It's not private.
Yep. Uh-huh.
That's just another point.
Yeah, and then turn somebody down or try to run them out for not wearing a diaper. That's right.
All right, I'm going to open up Greg from Michigan while we still got some time left here. Maybe I can knock some of these out. Go ahead, Greg.
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, good.
Listen, I wanted to mention you were talking about the 38th parallel earlier and people living below it not getting enough vitamin D. I've read that recently as well. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, and I'm betting Brent may know and you may, I believe the 38th parallel happens to be what we used to call the Mason-Dixon line.
I don't know that, but it's the 35th from what I understand.
35th. Well, I believe that follows along the Mason-Dixon line, if I'm not mistaken, between Tennessee and Kentucky, between North and South Carolina. I mean, it was relevant during the Civil War, of course.
And actually, that makes sense because I know when you travel south, that you got to get down in from New York. You got to get down into Tennessee before the weather starts warming up in the wintertime.
Right.
But the Mason,
so if you look at those few states there, I think that's where the Mason-Dixon line is in the eastern part of the country there.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mason-Dixon is the line between Pennsylvania and Maryland.
Well,
Mason-Dixon, further east,
and if you go west, then you're between North and South Carolina, and then west of that, you're between Kentucky and Tennessee.
Well, if that line runs, the Mason-Dixon runs straight west, it takes in a good chunk of Ohio, and it separates Indiana about in the middle and most of, at least the lower half of Illinois and right across Missouri. Below, much of those states are below the Mason-Dixon. It's pretty far north. Yeah, it's amazing.
No, I believe the line is further south, at least the Mason-Dixon line. Further south than that, I believe, but well, we'll both have to look at the map. But I think it's like I said, between Kentucky and Tennessee, between North and South Carolina, which would take it to the coast. If I'm right, that would take it to the Atlantic. I'm not sure how far west it runs, but anyway, Gerard, I'm very intrigued by what you were saying earlier about you anticipating that eventually here these retail outlets and restaurants and that type of thing are going to want to deny people who have had the vaccine from entering. I've been following this stuff for the whole year. I've never read that. I wanted to know if there's any info on that in the newsletter videos you put out today, or if you can put out some info on that so that I could look into it further.
Well, that was a rumor that somebody told me that it came out of California. There was a gym owner that looked into the liability of it, and he understood that there was going to be this vaccine shedding. And he did, and I don't know who it was. I'd like to find out more about it. You know what I mean? And it kind of makes sense if you think about it.
Well, yeah, it did. But so it's not something you read, but something someone told you
this
about.
Yeah, I did not verify it at all. And
well, it's very interesting, and rather than me being discriminated against for not having taken it, I would rather see it the other way around, although that's a very ironic, and you know, it's all a bad situation.
Well, I got news for you. It's going to happen it's going to happen as a natural course of thing, because as people that take the vaccine start dropping dead in the street, what's going to happen is going to become very obvious who's spreading the virus. I'm telling you, they're going to be like the new leper class in modern society. Nobody's going to want them around. You know,
a lot of it's going to depend on the media spin, I think, and the media is just going to say, look, there's new strains. Everyone needs to get their shots now. Look how bad it is.
Well, that's up to us. That's up to us, you know, as far as that goes. Look, they can say whatever they want, and it's a matter of who yells louder than who. The facts are the facts, and the truth is the truth. We got these doctors that are saying this is the case. What are you using as your evidence? Look, the evidence on masks is that they don't work and that they're detrimental, but yet they make us wear them, right?
Right.
So, I mean, if they're going to say new strains are coming out, the only thing that we can do is make sure that new alternate forms of media come out that we can go on, like I did tonight, like that BitChute is good, but what's his name? The Pillow Man there. He just opened up a whole new social media site. And,
Lindell?
Yeah, Lindell, Roger Lindell, right?
I can't think of his first name at the moment, but his last name is it Steve maybe or
Mike
Steve or Michael or Mike Lindell?
Mike Lindell. I just got a magic box in the bottom of my screen. It says Mike Lindell. So I'm like, no, it is Mike. That's what I thought it was. But that's going to be a site that normal, regular, everyday people can post videos and then will not be taken down as long as you don't have any pornography or bad language. I mean, he's going back to the moral standards of what it used to be to have public, airwaves, which means anything else flies other than that. So you'll be able to talk about all this stuff that they don't even want you talking about right now.
I hope that comes soon. And I don't know if you've heard, I was reading just yesterday about, I think it was Costco, joined a slew of corporations that have decided to quit carrying his pillows. And he's going to lose hundreds of millions of dollars, they said, from Costco alone. And they named all these other stores that are dropping him. Did you know about that?
I've heard that, and I also heard that when they did that, people went online and bought them online, and he made more money than he has in 10 years. So,
well, good.
You know what I mean? So it's up to us to push him, and, maybe some conservative organization could say, we're going to carry his pillows. Look at Donald Trump got how many million votes, and how many people are more for the conservative end. Don't you think that they could support him and carry his stuff? I mean,
I'm glad to hear that his sales online or whatever alternative he went to outsold his previous retail sales from the stores that dropped him. That's great. That brings me up to something else I wanted to mention, and I'd like to see if you guys have any opinion on it, and I think we're going to hear more about this in the future from some of these alternative or these conservative websites and things. It seems very strange to me how recently all these corporations like, Coca-Cola and Major League Baseball and all these others are coming out openly voicing their stance against what they're calling these voter suppression laws, and that's a bunch of nonsense. All they're griping about, when they never mention any details about what's so suppressive in the new voter legislation like they passed in Georgia recently and are considering for some other areas, which is good. The main thing they want is to require voters to show ID. And the leftists don't like that because they want the new illegal immigrants from the southern border to be able to vote, which they don't have a right to, but to be able to vote and vote Democrat, of course. And that, in my opinion, that's all they're worried about. But it strikes me as so odd that all these corporations are coming out and saying they're going to boycott this and that, all because they can't tolerate the voter discrimination laws, like, for example, pulling the All-Star game out of Atlanta recently. I'm sure you heard about that. But it occurs to me there's something odd about all these CEOs wanting to join the bandwagon on this stuff. And I'm thinking that they're a lot more influenced. These private corporation CEOs, these multimillionaires that most of them are, I'm thinking that they're a lot more in allegiance with the New World Order and perhaps this satanic cabal stuff and those people behind it, the Illuminati, than what your average American realizes.
Absolutely. They have control over everybody. And the fact that they got to go into the sports arenas to put this pressure on shows you how desperate they are. They're pulling out all stops. Look at they're on the death throes. That's what the average person doesn't understand. They're broke. They keep busting they keep busting their lines as far as the traffic children and the drug sales. There's a lot of stuff that went on with that ship in the Panama Canal. There were many other ships behind it that they pulled over and got tons and tons of cocaine out of, and trafficked children. They're not releasing it to the mainstream media, but this is the scuttlebutt going around, you know, the leaked knowledge that's out there. So I think they're on their way out.
Yeah, but it's just really strange how many of these very wealthy CEOs, I mean, a lot of these guys, they're probably Masons and things like that.
Well, not only that, most of them are pedophiles, and they got the goods on them. They say, either you do this or we're going to reveal you.
That's another good point. It's not just the politicians, evidently.
They don't let you have $1 billion without controlling you. That's the long and the short.
Yeah, and I guess that's private or public sector, either one.
That doesn't matter, because you could do too much damage as a billionaire. So they're going to make sure that every billionaire is kind of controlled. They want to make sure that you're not a radical, you know, right winger or whatever. Anyway, I got to.
If they can't do it with people like Trump or Lindell, you see what happens to them. Listen, I know you want to go. I got one more quick question. I don't watch the news as much as I used to at all, but I get the impression, has the media let your Governor Cuomo out there off the hook regarding the deaths in the nursing homes and the scandals with the women and their sexual harassment charges?
I don't know because I don't watch the news like that. Last I knew, they were going after him, but that in the past 2 weeks, I haven't heard
it. I don't hear it anymore. I'm wondering if they decided to let him off the hook. He is a leading Democrat. They're going after the guy in Florida now, that young congressman, about the underage girlfriend and the prostitution parties and all that. I think his name is Getz or something. He's a Republican. They're going after him. But I don't hear them talking about Cuomo anymore, which is very strange. Anyway. All right, you guys.
Even if they were going after Cuomo, they would use the Getz thing to take the news cycle out away from Cuomo. So they may have something going against Cuomo. They're just not talking about it. I don't know.
Well, again, to me, a lot of it comes down to who's a Democrat and who's a Republican, and the Republicans got the target on their back anymore.
There's a lot of people out there that are going after Cuomo for killing their grandparents.
Yeah, I know. I just don't hear it mentioned for a couple of weeks now, and before that, it was every day, and I'm wondering if somebody decided to let him off the hook.
Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be pretty hard to let him off the hook, though. He's got a lot of blood on his hand. You know.
Now, the media is a powerful thing, and we know who controls them.
Well, that's the first
All
thing.
All right,
that we
you guys.
Said. Okay, I'm gonna.
All right, thanks. You have a good night.
Yeah. Okay. Jim from PA, go ahead.
Yes, Jim in PA. I have a question for Brent. I just wanted, did he say that the Army is a lawful branch of the military?
Go ahead. You want to say something?
He said the Air Force was not. The Air Force was not a lawful branch, I think is what he said, right?
Right. It's not the Constitution. The powers of the federal government, the only powers they have are those that are the Constitution expressly grants. And there is no express grant for an Air Force. And there's no need for one. The Navy has more planes than the Air Force has had for a long time. The Army used to have a lot of airplanes, and that was called the Army Air Corps. But there is no lawful authorization of the United States Air Force. The Air Force Academy and all of the Air Force should be done away with. It's nothing but an extra bureaucracy. I've had high-ranking military men tell me that. This is silly.
Even the Marines have an Air Corps. Of course, they're part of the Navy, too.
Yeah, that's right. They do. They have helicopters and airplanes and fighter jets and the whole caboodle. So why do we need it? Yeah, that's what I said about the Air Force, not about the Army.
Okay, I'm making reference to Article 1, Section 8, Clause 12, where to raise and support armies, but no appropriations of money to that use shall be for a longer term than 2 years. So I interpret that, or I understand that to mean 2 years you can have an army, and that's all.
Well, no, we'd mentioned that a while ago and hadn't fleshed it out, but yes, and we talked about the appropriation for an army is for a fixed period of time because it doesn't take as long to get an army up and running as it does a Navy, and that's still true yet today. The Navy is up and running, armed, cocked, loaded, and on patrol 24 hours a day, along with the Marine Corps, I might add. They're on patrol, and they're ready to go to battle at a moment's notice worldwide, and always are, but the Army isn't. Not in the same way. They're there, and that's not a criticism of the Army. It's just the nature of the beast and the nature of what the Army does and what it has to do. It takes longer to tool up.
But I think his point is that they've never not had an army after 2 years. They've never untooled it, and we didn't.
I agree. We have a problem.
The Constitution says only for 2 years. Well, they've never disassembled it, as far as I know.
No, that's right.
The First World War, or before even.
And the reason they've not done it, and the argument is, well, they just ignore the militia of the several states. That's a lot of it. If the four militia clauses were paid any attention to, the only one anybody hears about is the fourth one, which is the Second Amendment. But there are three others, and without the three others, the Second Amendment becomes meaningless in many ways, not in all ways, but in many ways. But the Second Amendment is the foundation of the other three militia clauses. The Second Amendment is the only one of the three militia clauses that does not delegate any authority. It does not delegate any authority. It simply recognizes an authority that our Maker has already delegated to men. That is, the right and the duty of self-defense of oneself, one's family, one's neighbors, one's state, and one's nation. The defending the land. That's what the militia job is, and the Second Amendment delegates no rights. Government's not giving anybody anything. It's just a recognition and a protection. But the other three militia clauses, each of them, delegate duties to three classes of men. Three militia clauses, three classes. One of them delegates duties to that class of men called presidents of the United States. The other militia clause delegates duties to that class of men called the Congress of the United States. And the third militia clause delegates duties to that class of men called state governors and state legislators. And none of those three classes of men, state elected officials, governors and legislators, the congressmen of the United States, and presidents of the United States, none of them have even thought about fulfilling those duties under those militia clauses in a serious way for 175 years. 175 years. And that's exactly what Justice Joseph Story said about 170 years ago, but that was his greatest fear, that these three militia clauses would be ignored, and if we ignored them, we would lose not only the badge of our freedom. What is the badge of our freedom? Well, he says that our carrying guns, carrying loaded weapons, is the badge of our status as free men. That's what he said. But he said not only does it take away the badge of our freedom, it takes away the reality of our freedom. The badge of our freedom, the politium, he calls it, and the reality of our freedom. In other words, if we're pressed, if government abuses us, how do we defend ourselves? I want to throw this in. You've heard it, maybe. You ought to hear it again. I ought to hear it again, too. The only reason anybody would want to take your gun from you is so that he could do something to you that he could not otherwise do if you were armed. The only reason, there is no other reason, there can be no other reason, that any government or anybody wants to disarm you, except so that he could do something to you that he could not otherwise do if you were armed to prevent it. Back to you, Gerard.
Okay, thank you. Well, we're at 12:01 already, so okay. I got I got two people. Maybe I should take the question. I don't know if I can answer them, but maybe we can work on it for next week. Mm-hmm. Dennis from PA, you're on overtime. Real quick, what's your question?
Hey, thanks. Good evening. I'll talk fast because of the late hour. I have two questions, and one of them is, what value does an executive order have regardless of Senator Biden signs it or President Trump signs it? And the second thing I wanted to know, I got a cockamamie idea earlier today. What if the National Liberty Alliance would draft a concise letter, maybe 2 pages or 3 pages at the most, with some of the information that you covered tonight, Gerard, some of the science behind the mask and the vaccine, along with a reference or two to the Constitution, and draft a letter in conjunction with the Constitution Party, the Black Robe Regiment, or whomever would sign off on it. If we could distribute that possibly, you know, tell me if I'm all wet here. We could distribute that through the committees of safety at the grassroots level to the private sector, quote, and show our citizens that we're concerned about them and we're trying to do something to warn them of the danger.
Well, I think that if we were more set up with our committee of safety, we could do something quicker. I don't think that we're ready, to be honest with you, to do a big thing like that. But we may be forced into it anyway, depending on what's going on. You know what I mean?
Aren't there people kind of waiting in the wings that are kind of just waiting to get involved and ready to?
There's people that have signed up, but we're still woefully short for 3,152 counties. I mean, I think we have 1,200 or 1,500 people. 3,152 counties. I mean, if you think that, there's going to be four people per county running it, your administrator and your grand jury facilitators, that's a lot of people that we don't have. We have them in NLA, but they're not signed up and they're not engaged. And so I don't know how fast we could do that.
Well, what do you think about the idea in general? Do you think it's a waste of time, or do you think?
No, I think that we're going to be forced to address some of these things because that's what we do. And I mean, we're dealing the law, and they're not following the law. As far as an executive order goes, they're not even doing anything right according to the statute that allows that stuff. First of all, an executive order, it has to have an emergency, a bona fide emergency, which is they didn't have because it was a lie. It wasn't a pandemic. It was just a regular flu. The second thing is it has to have a time limit. And when that time limit is up, in order to extend it, the governor is supposed to write a paper stating the facts of why it needs to be extended, which nobody has ever done. Nobody's ever challenged them. They're not following the rules of what an executive order is. An executive order is not a constitutional law. It's not enforceable because it didn't come from the legislator. And one judge already threw some of them out, and he said, "This is America. We don't live under executive rule." Those are totalitarian states that do that. So
right.
But
people got so excited about President Trump and he was signing this and signing that, and I'm like, geez. What weight does that carry? You know, I mean, the sentiment is great about certain.
Well, he actually did take a lot of their infrastructure out because those executive orders that he signed were enforced, and he took out tons and tons of trafficking and stuff that the news media is never going to talk about, and rescued tons and tons of children that were trafficked. He did a lot of good because when he was in office, they could enforce it. And he had the special forces working, and they're not going to tell you, they're not going to report on this stuff because of the nature, of the news media. And, a lot of it was done in secret. I mean, they could have told us after it was done that they did it, but it ended up trickling out, So
right.
He
and even though it wasn't lawful or constitutional, we're glad some of those things happened.
Well, no, he did it in a constitutional way because he didn't extend it beyond its time, and there was an emergency. I mean, he operated within the parameters of the law.
Okay, so the emergency is allowed for.
That's right. He didn't break any laws, and he told us he was going to return us to the Constitution. And I'm telling you what, everything he did, he stayed within those confines.
And hopefully he's working on one last plan here, one last bomb.
We're all hoping anyway.
Okay, I yield my time. Thank you.
Okay, with that happy thought, we're going to end, and you know, we'll see everybody here next Monday. Thank you.
Sleep
God
well.
Bless. Say your prayers and fasting because we're in very dire times now. Pray that this whole pandemic thing somehow will be stopped. This angel of death that's going to come over us, and I have no idea where it's going to go or how bad it's going to get. Take your vitamin D3 and zinc, and get a hold of some ivermectin. And there's also budesonol works really good against COVID. But anyway, that's my parting wisdom. Have a good night, everybody. God bless.
Good night.
All right.